I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to your Monday. Thanks for being with us Unrivaled right here, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, brought to you by G2G Bars. As the voice said, plenty of protein, no preservatives, all natural ingredients. G2G Bars, perfect for anybody who needs a quick, tasty, nutritious boost. So there you go.
I figured out why I'm so freaking excited about college football starting.
About?
I am like through
the moon.
You don't
have to explain.
Every weekend I get more. No. I think you need to understand.
What?
You need to understand something. This is, I'm going to enlighten you here for 1 second.
Oh.
All right. Normally, like, and if you're a Utah fan, you're like, okay, we're going to play Weber State. We're going to play Northern Idaho. We're going to play whatever. and for 3 weeks, you're going to go through that, right?
Right.
So you're like, okay, fine, the season will get here. And you see the fans, because the fans' reaction is the same. It's like half the stadium shows up because they have things to do on Saturday.
Well, it'll be like a Friday or a Thursday kickoff at 5:30.
Yeah. It stinks. But this year, going to the swamp.
Oh, they're going to Florida?
SEC territory, 90,000 crazy people, and there'll be more than 90,000. So you know out of the gates, this is going to be an exciting game.
How many does the swamp fit? Let's see.
A lot.
Swamp.
I think it's close
capacity.
To 98,000.
Let me see here. Oh, I just got swamp boat capacity. If I wanted to do that. No. So the official number is 88,548.
They get 90 plus.
But they said the swamp's current configuration, however, leaves the ability to be able to announce crowds over 90,000 fans because of some sort of a setup of some.
Well, the setup is no one sits down.
Yeah,
right? That's how
like
it
the
works.
Whole game.
Well, and you stand sideways.
BYU fans would hate it. Yeah. Sit down. Oh. I came to watch the game.
As Jason Buck says, I'm doing my knitting. Look, here's why, though. You win this game, and then every single game after that, every single game is like must-see TV. Because you have to win it. So you win that first one, and then every week it's like, so even the games that you're not super excited about become super exciting.
Well, here we are.
And then I'm just telling you, you get to that USC game, you're undefeated. I pray that USC is undefeated, and it will be so freaking electric in Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Well, that's that part of me too that hopes that USC is 2-4, and then Utah just piles on again. Just like they have that kind of like.
Yeah.
And that might be the case. Who knows?
No. Their schedule's not that good.
Let's kick the show off as we always do with the cut here at the top of the program. We've got the AP poll, whether or not it matters to you or not. You've got your preseason rankings, and you got to pay a little bit of attention to them. And why not? As we get going here, we'll tell you where USC is. We'll tell you where Utah, BYU is in case you missed it, even if you know where they're at. Question is, should they be there? Right here. Let's get the cut going.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The cut presented by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utah Trust. Visit uofuhealth.org for more information. Scott, the week 2 Southern Utah game is not much must-see TV, though. I have to interject.
No, it is. No, that you don't understand.
I do, because there's no version of me going, now the Southern Utah game matters.
Well, that's because you're not a Utah fan. No, it's because...
It's not
because
about not being a fan. I'm a football fan, and guess what? I don't want to see... I will absolutely turn the station from a Southern Utah game. I'll absolutely read the box score. I'll see how Cam Rising did.
Then you're just not... You just don't appreciate what's going on here. You do not want to miss a moment of this, because you can't. Like, if you start off and you win that first game, you're 5 in the country. Like, you're gonna be 5 in the country. You're gonna be right there. I mean, you are gonna be you're gonna be way up there. Probably at some point, they're gonna talk about Utah as that third team.
I mean, like the Oregon of last year.
100%. Yeah.
Like, the reality is that Oregon got such a massive bump out of that Ohio State game, obviously, at the beginning of the year.
Big bump.
Huge bump.
Yep.
But what we're talking about now is Ohio State and Notre Dame play week one. So one of those teams is gone. And Notre Dame is the number 5 ranked team on all this, right?
Yes.
Here's Notre Dame's schedule, and I'll tell you right now, I don't care where they are toward the – maybe Notre Dame is doing well, maybe Clemson is both doing well, but they have to play each other too. Clemson and Notre Dame have to play one another. Those are the 4 and 5 teams currently. Now, obviously, in week 10 when they meet, that's going to be very different. I don't think you're going to see either of those teams probably even in the top 10, so they're not going to be in the way. But the Ohio State-Notre Dame game, Notre Dame is going to lose that football game against Ohio State. It is done.
And the worst thing that could happen is that Notre Dame actually wins that game.
Why?
Because Ohio State will go on and have a really good year, and they'll come back.
It'll be what they did last year with Oregon.
Right, and it'll be like, is Ohio State the 4th team? They're going to be Utah battling Ohio State for a 4 spot, and that doesn't bode well for Utah.
So Utah ends up at 7 in the AP poll. I said that they would be either 5 or 6 because I wasn't convinced that the teams that they put at 5 and 6 are good enough to be there. I think that 4, 5, and 6 are arguably teams that will be out pretty quickly on this thing.
Yes.
Clemson, Notre Dame, and Texas A&M are 4, 5, and 6 in this AP poll. Your Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia rankings are exactly where you think they should be.
And you don't know where Georgia is because they lost a lot when they won a chance. I know they just reload. I get it. It's fine. Whatever. But the chemistry and everything changes every year. You never know.
I don't know if Utah at 7 is a slight at all. I think that's kind of – I mean, that's fine where you are. I do think that Texas A&M – I mean, Texas A&M and Utah both lost 4 games last year.
Right.
But the reason that they're put where they are is because Utah had a breakout season, and they returned everybody else. And Cam Rising has a huge part of why that number 7 is next to Utah. Texas A&M, they get the benefit of having Jimbo Fisher as their head coach and a massive recruiting class. Right? Notre Dame is on that list because it's Notre freaking Dame. They haven't done anything else except for wake up and walk out, and their hair looks perfect, and they haven't done anything. They're the girl that you're jealous of because she just gets – she just rolls out of bed, and she's cute. And it's like, come on. No. And Clemson, I don't think we even know what Clemson – Clemson lost 4 games last year. And Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Clemson, I'm not saying this like Utah should feel slighted. What I'm saying is there is so much room for Utah to improve. The reason that the Florida game matters so much is because they can make that immediate jump. The Southern Utah game doesn't matter nearly as much as you're trying to pretend like it does. But then after that, you got to get into it because San Diego State is an absolute one that the team wants to win, and it's still a game that you might not totally be ready for because you're going to be the next week right into Pac-12 play, and it's hard to ignore the fact that San Diego State is not going to get looked at as some of the other opponents that they're going to be facing in that Pac-12 schedule.
So let me go back to Texas A&M, to your comments about these 3 teams ahead of Utah, which are Clemson, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Texas A&M is there simply because Jimbo Fisher stood up to Nick Saban. And Nick Saban actually is a little bit nervous about what's going on at Texas A&M. So Texas A&M is there just because Alabama's nervous. It has nothing to do with whether Texas A&M – none of that.
Wants to see Texas A&M and Alabama – closely associated with each other in the rankings when they face one another.
And they are going to face each other at some point in the year. And that's the whole point. If you look at these teams above Utah, they play each other. They all play each other at the end of the day. They all do. I mean, other than Clemson. Like Clemson, they play Notre Dame. I mean, everybody plays everyone. Georgia's the only – no, Georgia could play Alabama in an SEC championship game. But the point here for me is Notre Dame's in there because – it's Notre Dame.
Yeah.
It's an homage to our national football program. They're the only one in the country.
Not my program. Not my football program.
Yeah. You can vote. You can,
it's
you
know, not the, my football the program. Vote,
anyway, so Clemson is, you know, it's a question mark. What has jumped off the plate for me, though? We've gone through all these way too early projections.
Yep.
Right? We've gone every publication, every outlet, every sports thing across the country that lives and breathes and talks into a microphone, whether it's a streaming service, whether it's print, whether it's television, radio. Everybody's weighed in. Everybody's weighed in. And Utah has kind of moved up and down, but they've kind of stayed in that same spot. You've had people talk about, you know, USC. Well, USC is the team to beat out west. Oregon. And they weathered all of this. Utah did. And the reality is they can't put Utah higher than they are because Utah's in the Pac-12. Okay, it's just Utah. It's in the Pac-12. It's not Oregon. It's not USC. Yeah. And this is the highest ceiling that they could possibly fathom with Utah. Them. They just can't allow them
until games are played. Right.
Because it's a safe spot. It's yes, we respect. Yes, you're returning these players. You played great at the end of the year. You've got a really good coach stability. You can name all the reasons. Utah cannot get higher than they are unless they play games because people are just going to go, okay, well, if they fall out, then, you know, we're basing everything off of last year. But if they go up, then, you know, we were somewhat right. So right.
Let me compare.
You got to be happy if you're a Utah fan and you're where you are because that's about as much respect as you're going to get across this country from anyone ever unless you win.
Here's the interesting thing is to look at. Here's a fun little game for you to play, Scott. Look at the AP poll and look at the USA Today coaches poll, okay? The thing that is exactly the same is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Michigan goes up and swaps spots with
Texas A&M.
With Texas A&M.
Yep.
And then Michigan is actually behind Utah, which I think is probably where they should be. I think they right. were they got their butts absolutely handed to them in the playoff. Yeah. They had no business being you know, taken on – you know, being in the playoff, taking on Georgia and that thing, they just got their butts handed to them. But here are the biggest disparities that you go, you know what? These preseason polls are absolute garbage. here are the parts where you go, who got it wrong then? Because Texas is 18 in the coaches poll, and they're nowhere to be found. Thank heavens, restored a little bit of faith in some of these football writers across the country. Don't fall for it, and don't put Texas in the top 25. Fine. The biggest disparity for me is in the coaches poll, when we were looking at where all these teams are and where everybody's quote unquote supposed to be, there are teams all up and down this thing that you're going, I'm not exactly sure. I think that there's a little part of people that actually cheat off of some of these rankings, you know, a little bit. I mean, Oregon is 11 in the AP poll. What did they do to be 11th in the AP poll? They're 12th in the USA Today.
They recruit. They're a brand. Dan Lanning came from Georgia.
How does USC find itself even higher in the AP ranking than it does in the coaches' poll? To me, I have no clue where this comes from. But all the same teams end up in the exact same places, except for teams like Texas, who had no business being in there in the first place. BYU is nowhere to be found on the coaches' poll, and yet they're number 25. How is it that BYU gets that version of respect there? What's the closer line there, Scott? Do you think that they're the 29th best team as the coaches poll puts, or are they closer to 25, or is it lower, or is it higher than it should be, or is it exactly where BYU should be on the
list? If I'm a team in the top 25, I don't want to play BYU.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to play BYU. I think BYU probably outside of the top, you know, four or five teams in the country, they probably could play with them on any given day. I mean, every day, week in and week out, might be a little hard, just a depth thing. A healthy BYU team is pretty potent right now.
What did we say, John Wilner? John Wilner's list, I think he put Cincinnati at 10, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, they're 23.
They're 23 in the AP poll.
Here's something that jumped out at me as well. You talk about conferences, right? And how, man, there's the SEC, the Big Ten, And then maybe the ACC, and then you have the Big 12 and the Pac-12. Well, look at in the top 10, three of the schools are from the SEC. Two of the schools are from the Big Ten. There's one school from the ACC. And there's one school from the Pac-12. And there's two schools from the SEC, and Oregon just outside of the top 10.
Right.
I mean, if you look at the top, you know, 15, the program that doesn't have a lot of teams is the ACC. I mean, if you want to talk about an overrated conference. Weak conference that, quite frankly, should be scared, they really should be scared.
You think the ACC is weaker than the Pac-12?
I do.
I don't know about that. I mean, I guess they're just set where they're at with their TV deal, and so everybody's like, okay.
It's just they're safe in that regard.
And they have legacy programs in there that are underperforming currently, Florida State.
If Washington's good, which Washington could be good, you have Washington, Oregon, Utah's really turned a corner, USC, UCLA, and then take the top programs in the ACC.
You can't say UCLA and Washington, though, because they're just they're not good. They haven't been good for a little bit.
I understand. I get that.
UCLA, Florida, by the way, never good.
Okay.
Has never been good.
Florida State. Where are they these days?
Yeah.
No. I mean, they're one of the big programs in the – Miami. Miami has been average to terrible for quite some time.
Yes.
North Carolina. Virginia.
Don't dog NC State. They're the highest ranked
– Virginia Tech. Right? I mean, the only school is Clemson. Outside of Clemson, they're very average as a conference.
Well, but
I mean, Stanford up until a few years ago was amazing. Was really good. I mean, they've fallen off a cliff. I mean, they could be the Florida State of the West.
They have Clemson and they have NC State. Those are two teams that are both in the top
15.
Right.
Right.
And then Miami is probably overrated at 16. We'll see. Pitt has not been this high in a long time, right? Going into a season, you start to think about
my point is, and look, Texas A&M could be overrated. My point is, I don't think that these conferences are that far off outside of Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia. I really don't.
Here's the tough thing for BYU. Okay, they're going to likely win that first week. And you're going to have some people drop out immediately, right, from this thing. You're going to see a couple teams lose here and there. They're going to drop straight out.
Kentucky's 20.
Right.
And they're going to lose to their basketball team.
Boy, that's another thing for another segment. But I'm telling you, BYU will jump in that first week. How many times have we seen this before where BYU has an early jump? Because then they suddenly get to game two, and that it's a tall order from the get-go. The ability for BYU to stay in the top 25, it's always trying to get back into the top 25 at some point for the Cougars. And you're already starting out right there on the cusp, and so you get a first win, and maybe you go up to 21, 22 after that first week. But then you just run the gauntlet of trying to take on, you know, your Baylors and your Oregons and Notre Dame and Arkansas.
So BYU's schedule is South Florida, and then it's
Baylor at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's
I mean, that's immediately you're right into the fire there. Yeah. And whether or not Baylor is getting enough love or respect across this thing, they're number 10 in the AP poll. They're playing – BYU is playing currently, as it starts out here, two top 10 teams are on their schedule. They also have Arkansas at number 19. And I think that you're going to see a lot of these other – I think Arkansas is going to end up climbing. I think Arkansas really will.
Yeah, I think Arkansas.
And then you have Oregon.
Underrated.
You've got Oregon, of course, who's the number 11 team. They're going to jump up in the first couple of weeks because their schedule's not, you know, complete. Oh no, they play Georgia right out of the gate.
All right, so BYU playing Baylor, Oregon, Notre Dame, and Utah State. I mean, Utah State's not a slouch.
No slouch.
You're looking at four of your first six games are against pretty good teams, but here's the silver lining in that if you're BYU. Baylor's at home, early on in the year, new quarterback.
Arkansas's at home.
BYU plays Oregon on the road early on in the season.
Right.
Oregon's going to be better at the end of the season than they are in the beginning, provided they don't have injuries.
Not a lot known about Bo Nix, how he's going to
do
this offense.
Do not know. It's an unknown. They have Utah State at home, and I think Notre Dame's overrated. I think BYU will be way more up for that game than Notre Dame is.
You think so?
I do. I think for Notre Dame, this is like, we got to go to Las Vegas this weekend and play a game.
No, they rolled out like a whole new outfit. You call them outfits? Is that what we call them?
That's a promotional thing.
I know, but they because it's a Shamrock series, and they get to wear this cool jersey they've never worn before. They get to have all this attention at an NFL stadium in Las Vegas. This game means something to them. Now, whether or not they're going to take BYU seriously is another thing. I think that the idea of them being in Vegas and playing, they feel like they're the only team there. And that could absolutely work in BYU's favor. But at that point, too, they're going to be six games in, seven games into the season. Same thing for BYU. So if BYU is highly ranked, if they could get through that stretch and not have more than one loss, if they have just one loss by the time they get to Notre Dame, I mean, that's going to be spectacular for them. But then Notre Dame will also kind of wake up a little bit and play probably BYU a different way than they would have just – I think they look at any other team that they play that's not Michigan, Ohio State, maybe in the college football playoff, they start playing some of these. They look at everybody else like it's a gift that they're playing in that game. They're overrated for sure.
I'll tell you what I think is BYU's hardest game of the year.
What?
I think going to Boise State in early
November. You keep saying that.
I think because, look, these games are hard. BYU schedule's hard, but the way it plays out and is laid out, it's going to give BYU as much of an advantage as a schedule could potentially do it, hitting teams at the right time, because that's what happened to BYU last year too. They hit those teams at the right time and ended up beating five power five. They end up beating the Pac-12 conference and it could play out that same way this year.
I think first week of the season you're going to see Utah likely. Now, if Notre Dame beats Ohio State, which is, I think that's a low probability, Ohio State would be the new six or seven. Right?
Where's this game? It's
at the Horseshoe. But that's where they lost to Oregon last year, though. They lost to Oregon last year, first game of the season. Now, that's on their mind. So that actually bodes well for people who want
but
to
But this is Notre Dame. Notre Dame They'll more. Get up for Notre Dame.
Okay. We're going to take our first break.
Really?
Kind of work through it. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Work through a little bit of the rankings
started
there. It's going to be a tall order this year for BYU, Utah, and Utah State to all stay in those high rankings. I think DJ is the one who DJ had a very, very worthy of bold and stupid prediction like we had on our show. He had a very worthy one of those. You know what he said? Is that after the first 5 weeks of the season, BYU is actually going to be higher ranked than Utah is.
Wow.
I know. I was like, I was proud of DJ. Don't shake your head. DJ, he's a smart man. You might know what he's talking about. And look, it was a gamble.
Well, he's got to say Utah loses at Florida then. That's the only way.
Week five or six years. Who do they play first in the Pac-12?
Arizona State.
Oh, he's a San Diego State Aztec.
Are you talking about DJ or PK?
No, I'm talking about DJ.
Oh, PK's an ASU guy.
No, DJ's I know, not. But I'm just saying, no, SDSU. He's a San Diego guy.
Oh, maybe he thinks
I don't know if he's an Aztec per se. He's not an Aztec lover. I mean, the guy is, first and foremost, wasn't he a Santa Barbara guy? Santa Cruz? Which one was it? He's a gaucho. Gaucho. Santa Cruz are the banana slugs. So, there you go. All right. We'll take the break. We'll figure out who the gauchos are, which one of the schools they are, and then we'll come back. Mitch Harper going to join us next, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com, host of Cougar Sports Saturday. He's going to give us his thoughts on the very first BYU scrimmage this weekend. We've got sound from both scrimmages that you're going to hear in the show as well from Utah and BYU. We'll come back. How much do these scrimmages matter at the beginning? Well, Jaren Hall had some stuff to say. We'll hear that. Plus, we'll hear Mitch's reaction to everything as well. Stay with us. Unrivaled continues, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keering. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented baby, by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 VKSL Sports Zone, brought to you by G2G Bars. Tons of protein, no preservatives. G2G Bars, perfect for anybody who needs that quick, tasty, nutritious boost. Get them in your refrigerated section at your grocery store if they don't have it. Shame them until they get it. Mitch Harper joining us on the program on the KSL Sports Zone. Mitch Harper, of course, our BYU insider for KSLSports.com and host of Cougar Sports Saturday every Saturday. And he follows everything BYU related, so you don't have to be at practice. Don't worry if you miss it, okay? Because he's got it covered. Mitch, thanks for being with us. First scrimmage on Saturday for the Cougs. What does a first scrimmage usually entail? Because I feel like in the fall, it's pretty much just, hey, let's make sure guys don't get hurt. But you also want to see some energy out there, and from what BYU put out from their side of things on YouTube, it looked pretty sharp.
It did, and I think that also it was pretty physical in the trenches, and it kind of gave them a live look at, you know, BYU's defensive line against an offensive line unit that might be, you know, top 10 nationally in the country this year. So I think that was a good look, probably the best look you're going to get from that scrimmage. Otherwise, you know, you were seeing a lot of basically two-hand touch and things getting whistled early. Quarterbacks obviously weren't live, but it was a chance also for younger guys too to maybe show some flashes and give some some data or some actual film that would suggest to coaches, hey, this guy warrants keeping a roster spot, you know, in this year and in beyond when BYU gets into the Big 12 conference. So I think that was the biggest value to that scrimmage. BYU pretty much knows who they're, you know, top 44 or so guys are going to be in terms of the two deep on offense and defense. But it was just another way to see some younger guys and get a better look at the trench play for BYU as they get ready for South Florida.
A lot of people reported a sonic boom on Saturday morning.
It woke me up.
A lot of people thought it was meteors bouncing off the atmosphere. But it was actually Jaren Hall with a strong arm throwing deep passes to
Puka.
That's the one
compliment you'll get from Scott Mitchell.
Well, no, but to my point, we all know it was meteors, that the world is coming to an end soon. But before it does, Jaren, people talk, arms stronger, looks more comfortable. Did that play out in the scrimmage?
Yeah, he played about 25 plays. And, you know, a lot of what we've seen in the observation periods of fall camp this far, we haven't seen the quarterbacks, Jaren included, stretch the field much. We saw, you know, last week, that great pass to Chase Roberts, which was a well-thrown ball deep in stride. Chase Roberts caught it for a touchdown. But a lot of it's been, you know, checkdowns and going through your reads and your progressions and then turning to the running back. We've seen a lot of that from all of the QBs. And, you know, Jaren, I think that he's fine. I mean, he's calm. He's confident in this offense. And it was just – he was the definition of a guy you got to keep healthy – at all costs, because the outlook of BYU this season changes drastically without him. But I think that there has been some growing optimism on the front of, you know, a guy like Jacob Conover, him being the clear-cut second-string guy. Maybe part of that is due to Cade Finnegan, you know, never being fully healthy in spring practices. But, you know, Conover has done enough to say that they feel confident he's the number two guy. Now is the trust to the level of a Baylor Romney where, you know, if Jaren's not fully 100%, do you rest him and trot out Jacob Conover? I still think that's to be determined. But the indications from what coaches are putting out there about Conover seem to be a lot more optimistic than I was expecting at this point heading into week three of camp.
Mitch, one of the things I think we're all kind of waiting to see was, I mean, there's a mix of live action, you know, blowing the whistle early on some of the 1v1s and things like that. But it definitely, you can definitely see that there is a that Chris Brooks is a sizable guy to try to bring down. How did he impress on Saturday, and what did you think? There were definitely some massive holes that O-line opened up for him.
No question, and I think that he's going to be a perfect fit in BYU's wide zone rushing attack. And I think with this offensive line, he's going to have an opportunity to be a 1,000-yard rusher. I don't think that's unreasonable to think. I think the question for him is does he emerge as that just every basically he's the feature back for pretty much the entire season. You know, I it'll be interesting to see how Aaron Roderick incorporates a Jackson McChesney or a Miles Davis who have earned high praise, and they're younger guys and they're going to be around in the Big 12 era. Do you pick your spots to give Chris Brooks a breather and you give it a look to McChesney and Davis? McChesney's had, you know, game reps, and he's impacted games last year against USC, against Navy in 2020. Miles Davis has played a little bit back in 2020 as well. You know, do you find spots to turn to those guys, or do you just work the bell cow, and that being Chris Brooks? Because I think he's good enough to do that for BYU this year. And I think that he's a 1,000-yard back. I mean, the way he's built with this offensive line, it's not a surprise now that he picked BYU without ever visiting the campus. He just looked at the film and knew who the offensive line personnel was and said, I'm going to go there because that's going to give him a chance to get to the NFL. And I think he picked wisely because he seems to be a perfect fit for BYU.
That's an interesting observation, because one of the things you want is you want your team healthy. You want them going full speed late in the season, and you have a back that has been carrying the load all year and is taking a lot of shots. You slow down later on in the year. You can have an O-line, you know, creating holes, but that guy isn't hitting at full speed. And regardless of, you know, of him being the bell cow, as you say, that I'm sure they'll have someone who will emerge. And just because they're going to be given chances. I mean, you're just not going to run a guy the whole entire game. So that will be an interesting thing to see unfold. I'm curious, the AP came out today and BYU is 25. Your thoughts on that?
I thought it was a little bit lower. I think BYU deserves to be higher than 25. So I think they're good enough to be, you know, honestly a top 15 team, just based off of how college football typically views these preseason polls and how teams are viewed going into a season. You know, if you've got the returning star quarterback, if you've got the experience on the offensive line, if you have a bunch of returning starters, you won a lot of football games the last couple years in the case of a non-P5 like BYU, typically that warrants, you know, top 20, maybe top 15. But to sneak into the poll, I think it's fine for BYU because you have that preseason ranking next to you. It's important. I think people that say it's useless, I think that's wrong. I think these do matter from a perception standpoint, and perception is king in college football. But I think BYU deserved to be a little bit higher, honestly.
Mitch, as you see kind of – well, Matt, your co-host on Cougar Sports Saturday, Matt Biamonte, actually said, I think, 17 or 18 maybe. I thought that was a bit high. I also don't – like, in my mind, I'm going, it's good to get the nod to be in the top 25. It's kind of a head scratcher as to why they wouldn't be higher, because they returned so many people, including their starting quarterback. And I know that replacing Tyler Allgeier is a big deal, but I think with the returning production, it's amazing to me that you'll see a team like BYU that gets put further down in the rankings because of, I don't know what. You tell me what the factor is as to why they would go that far down in the rankings or not be up. I mean, why? You've got USC in the middle of at 14, and Texas in the coaches' polls at 18. For heaven's sakes, how does BYU? Is it just because regionally where they're at, or what are the factors that go into BYU being a 25 instead of an 18, for example?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it's they're not in the Power 5 conference yet, and I think that this year definitely hurt them when it comes to preseason rankings. If they were, you know, in the Big 12 and coming off a year where they had a 10-win campaign in the Big 12, they'd probably be where an Oklahoma State is, you know, somewhere around 12. I think that also what hurt them, and it's weird to say because they just don't mean anything, but the bowl game. You know, if BYU wins that bowl game, even that, you know, the ugly game that it was, and they're 11-2, I think just on the surface, I think that would naturally have given them a little bit of a bump, but you lose to a program that didn't have a football team 5 years ago, and you lose it in an ugly fashion, I thought. And that just kind of put a sour taste, sour ending to an otherwise good year, and you're still a non-P5 ultimately. And I get where the voters are coming from, because you're going to size up in Arkansas, who navigated a tough SEC West schedule, plus a non-conference game last year against Texas, and they were a 9-win team. You're going to give them the nod. And now, you know, BYU's going to have the chance to play them on the field in Provo, but, you know, not being in a P5 league hurts in these situations. You know, Cincinnati coming off a playoff, they're at, you know, at the back end of the the polls, because they're not a P5 team yet. So that's where the value in the future for BYU will be, being in a Big 12 that's still a power league and plays a much higher level of football than what they're currently in. And maybe if they can continue to have success, they'll have higher preseason rankings in the future, I would imagine.
You mentioned the bowl game for BYU. I forgot BYU even played the bowl game.
Mitch wanted to forget because he had to be there.
Yeah, it was so early and so awful. Hopefully that'll change this year. You know, we sit here and we talk to you every week. We talk about how great this O-line is, and the quarterback and the wide receivers and tight ends and running back. We don't ever talk about the defense. Like is there a star on the defense? And I guess my perception is, it almost feels like, and this is weird because Kalani's a defensive guy. Now, he was an offensive guy when he played, but he's become a defensive coach. Mm-hmm. And you just don't hear, at least I don't hear a lot about the defense. Feels like the secondary might be the strength of this team. Help me out here.
Yeah, I think the best unit on the defense is the linebackers. I'm actually putting together a piece that's going to go up tonight on KSLSports.com ranking the position groups. And the last ranked position group I have on BYU's team is the defensive line. Mm-hmm. Actually, defensive tackles last, and then defensive ends before that. And I say that group because it's kind of a no-name group. And, yeah, you got Tyler Batty, a defensive end, who, if there's anyone that maybe, you know, and now with Jan Jorgensen, a former BYU great coming in as an analyst to help out that room, maybe his expertise can lend a helping hand to try to get Batty to be a 10-sack season guy. But that group is where there's cause for concern, because you're going to go up against offensive lines that are some of the best in college football this year in Baylor, in Arkansas, in Oregon, and Notre Dame. That's concerning. BYU can't win every game, you know, 40-37 each and every week. It's not a recipe to get a 10-win season. And last year, in many games, pretty much every game, there were stretches where opposing teams, whether it was Georgia Southern or was a depleted USC, they were picking apart BYU. And I know BYU dealt with a lot of injuries last year, and they gave a lot of valuable snaps to a lot of this defensive personnel. But I think you hit on something, Scott, that this defense lacks a bona fide star. You know, Keenan Peely last year, when he went down with an injury, it changed everything for the defense. But I don't know if I still look at him like he's a Devin Lloyd type. I don't look at him in that same breath. That, to me, is a bona fide defensive star. BYU lacks that guy. Maybe Peyton Wilgard can emerge into that. Maybe Batty. I think the secondary's improved. I think the cornerbacks are going to be really good by BYU standards. I think Caleb Hayes, an Oregon State transfer who stepped in last year, had 11 pass breakups. He's probably the best cornerback. And D'Angelo Mandel and Gabe Judy Lally belt. That rounds out the group with Jacob Robinson being a hybrid nickel cornerback guy. That's going to be a solid group. Safety, a little bit of question. Malik Moore is a starter. Ammon Hanneman probably going to be the other starter alongside him. But again, they're not these household names per se. I want to see some stars emerge. And when you bring up Kalani Sitake's track record, you know, I would have never thought in my wildest dreams that BYU in year 7 with Kalani would have had a star-studded wide receiver room and not a star-studded defensive line group. Right. It's kind of crazy to think. So, yeah, that is something that you want to see the stars emerge, because the great BYU teams, they've always had one or two legit stars on the defensive side, and that's going to be a chance for this team early with some of these quality opponents in the month of September.
You could see the breakdown of the scrimmage from last Saturday on KSLSports.com. Mitch Harper has it there, and then you heard him talking about the ranking by position group, which I'm sure we're going to be chatting about tomorrow a little bit. I think we see that the defensive line comes up time and time again as if there's a weakness, it's going to be that position group, even with a lot of names that people might recognize too. I mean, it's interesting to see that guys like Tyler Batty, that people were waiting for him to have this crazy breakout second year, and we just didn't really see it. And, you know, you think about some of the names that are coming into the school, Hunter Greer and Issa Moa out of Weber High School. There's just still young guys, but then there's Lorenzo Fautea, who's been there, it seems like, forever, too. So it's like Earl Tuioti Mariner, another name that I think that people were expecting to be way more. But this is also a position group that needs to have seven or eight guys be solid because they come in and out of the game so much.
Yeah, they do. And I think, you know, Earl Mariner, he might be, I think because he's healthy now, he might be one of the most improved guys this season. If the season started today, coming out of scrimmage number one, I would expect him and Tyler Batty to probably be the starting defensive ends for BYU if they have a four down front. And I think that, you know, the defensive line should be better because everyone returns except for Uriah Leatawa. So naturally, I think that lends itself to being there's a lot more confidence for Elisa Tuiaki in this room. It's just a matter of kind of they got to prove it in games. I don't think anyone's going to anoint them anything going into the preseason until they prove themselves, and they're going to have a chance to prove it because the quality of the offensive lines they're going to face.
Mitch, we're excited for another week of camp here, and we're looking forward to your coverage as well. KSLSports.com. Thanks for hanging out, man.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys. Take care.
There you go.
Well,
thanks, Mitch.
Mitch Harper.
Good stuff there.
Like, really good. You think he studies this at all? Or
I think he eats, sleeps, and drinks it. I have a question for you.
What is it?
It's a good sports trivia
question.
Should we do
it on the way back here?
We should do it on the way back.
Okay.
You're going to like this.
All right.
This is a good one.
Scott's got a question, and you can play right along with us here. We've got more to go. As we come back, we're going to have our What Are the Odds around the corner. Stay right here with us when Rival continues. First, though, stop playing tobacco's game. Control your future. Free nicotine patches and nicotine gum at waytoquit.org. We'll take the break here. Weekend Warriors next, right here, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
Presented by G2G Bars on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for being a part of the show. Hey, welcome to your week. It's a Monday, and you know what? I can officially say next week we're going to be watching college football. That feels pretty darn good, Scott.
It's amazing.
Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery with you again. Now, before we went to break, Scott, you said something along the lines of, oh, I got something for you when we get back. So what do you have for me then since we're coming back here and you've got a question that you're going to throw out
okay.
there, right?
So in the 1976 Olympic Games, Bruce Jenner, now known as Caitlyn Jenner.
Where were those held, by the way?
Montreal.
Montreal.
Won the decathlon in the Olympics.
Okay.
So DECA is 10.
Yeah, got it.
The other part of it means event.
Okay.
So the 10 events in the decathlon are what? That's the question.
Okay.
What are the 10 events in the decathlon? Now, if you're really if you're really astute, you can list them in order of
thanks. I'm gonna have to just start rattling them off here.
All right.
So your field events are shot put, javelin,
one,
discus,
two, three.
Is hammer on there?
No.
Okay. So shot put, javelin, discus. They do the long jump.
Yep. There's four.
They do the mile run.
Yes.
They do the 400 meter.
Six.
The 800 meter. No? Okay. The 100 meters.
Seven.
Okay. They do pole vault for sure.
Eight.
They do pole vault for sure.
Two more.
These are going to be the tough ones. Do they do a longer distance? Do they do a 5,000 meter?
No.
They do a 10,000 meter?
No.
Oh, a high jump.
I'll help you out just a little bit.
High jump?
High jump. So you got one left.
I got one left. Is it a running or a field event?
Steeplechase.
Oh, gosh, dang it.
No, they don't run more than a mile.
Okay. But, okay, I get it. Oh, okay. The 200?
No.
Okay. Did I say 400?
You did, and that's one of the events.
And the 800, did I already say that?
Nope, that's a wrong answer. Mm. You said the 100.
How on earth would I – oh, it's 100-meter hurdles.
Correct.
Boom.
You got them all.
Or back then it was probably the 110. No, it's still the 110 hurdles.
The 110-meter hurdles.
My what's funny is when you hear people who like – my mom is always like, she runs the 440. I'm like, Mom, that's not an event. Oh, she's running the 220. She's got the old 330. I'm like, Mom –
So,
the thing
about this is, like, you don't have to be, like, elite in the world. You just have to be good enough in
well, enough and you'll events. Have guys that dominate some events, and right. they're not even close to winning the top of the, yeah. you know.
You have to be a really good athlete.
I hope you played at home, everybody. Yeah. Scott had the question of the day there. All right. It is our Weekend Warriors.
Did you like that question?
I did.
That's a good question.
And listen, did I perform better than you thought I would?
No, you were good.
That's because I, you know why? Because I was a.
You were a track guy.
Well, I was a. Don't ever call me a track guy. I was a field guy. So
you're the field part of track and field.
I was so far away.
So basically,
what's hilarious to
basically
me is,
you hopped across the track to get to the field.
I was a duathlon. All right, I was doing the shot put and discus. I was a very serviceable. I was not for being a chubby guy. Like, they just assume, oh, you throw the shot put well. But I was actually a pretty darn good discus thrower in my day. So there you go. I'm like, I try to tell my kid, I'm like, hey, I could coach you. You could throw the discus. Because no kid gets coaching in the discus in the 7th, 8th, and 9th grade unless they have a decent school. I'm like, I'll coach you, man. And you'll win some events before the other kids catch up. All right? Let me see here. Our Weekend Warriors on the program here. I'm trying to figure out if we're missing somebody on here, but I do want to make sure that Pete Carroll, not the Pete Carroll you're thinking of, but the Princeton Hall of Fame basketball coach. In Princeton, when I was growing up, watching Princeton like be a bracket buster in the NCAA tournament was always fun.
Yeah,
because I was like, look, and there was only one Ivy League school that really were worth a darn in basketball when I was growing up, and it was Princeton. It was Pete Carroll's team. He died at 92 this weekend, creator of the Princeton offense. I couldn't tell you what the Princeton offense is.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Is that the blender?
No, it's a 4-minute offense.
Oh, okay.
So he's slowed the game down, spread everybody out.
Right,
and it was this annoying. It's just playing your little brother.
It's that Wisconsin versus Minnesota late in the season Big Ten basketball where it's 52-48.
Yeah, that's a high score. 52. 52 might be both teams. And they almost upset number one Georgetown in 1989.
They were close.
They were a 16 seed.
Yeah.
And it was annoying to watch, but it was also beautiful because they bought into it and they ran it to perfection.
This is
smart. Okay, so the Kansas City Chiefs safety, starting safety, Justin Reed.
They let him kick one in the preseason.
He made an extra point.
I saw this.
In a preseason game.
Good for him.
Now, people go, oh, this is
so dumb.
This is the Chiefs screwing around. It's not.
No. This isn't just letting a guy just like, come on, coach, let me kick. Because everybody on the sideline goes, come on, coach, I can kick that one.
Well, of course, everyone thinks
they
can kick.
The kid, when
everyone
I ask
thinks
the kids
they can play quarterback, kid, too.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
It's more that do the kicking, though. Because when you go to practice and you ask this group of 12-year-olds that I'm coaching right now in Kaysville, I go, all right, who could kick? And they're all like, oh, yeah, totally, right here. And you're like, no, you can't.
And they all want to kick and they want to be the punter. They
all
want
to punt, they want to kick.
Yes.
Wild.
But this is good because every once in a while, your kicker goes down, tries to make a tackle, pulls a groin, something, and can't kick. And having a guy that can actually do it, and Justin Reed's legitimate. I mean, they're like, and the fact that he did it in a game makes it even
more
legitimate.
He didn't look bad. I watched the video of it, and I was like, he looks the part.
Yeah.
I mean, he kicked a 65-yard field goal in practice.
Yes.
So you can't fake distance on something like that.
Can't fake
so
stupid.
I liked it. All right. Let me see here. I'm trying to find I'm trying to find where we're at here on the market. Oh, the Dow Jones up 151 points today. S&P up 16 and the NASDAQ up 80 points. There's your market update brought to you today as they also, the folks at TryDayTrading.com bring you the Weekend Warriors as well. So TryDayTrading.com, there's your market update. And there are your Weekend Warriors. We'll come back. More to go on the program. Around the corner, We've got ourselves a little bit of a chat with Jeremiah Jensen. JJ's going to walk in the studios. We'll talk. I want to talk some locals in the NFL because they do such a darn good job this time of year to show you how some of the locals did this weekend. Maybe some of these names you may have missed. What did they do in the preseason? We'll come back. We'll talk about that. The AP rankings that BYU and Utah have. High school football is also underway. Stay with us. Unrivaled continues. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome on in, everybody. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for hanging out, everybody.
You're welcome.
We had a great first hour there, Scott.
That was fun.
Talking some college football, talked with Mitch Harper about BYU's first scrimmage. We've got sound from Utah and BYU's first scrimmages. We're going to play that in just a little bit. Hang tight. We got it.
I learned about sonic booms from meteors.
So the meteor thing.
Meteorites?
Yeah, the meteorite. Meteorite. We woke up. So my wife and I were, I think like a lot of people, got a loud, the old loud boom. It sounded like something hit my house because I could feel, like it sounded like there was the boom and a little bit of a rattle.
There
on
was
the
something
roof.
Going on, yeah.
So it had me walking around the house at 8 a.m. on Saturday.
Yeah.
Screw you, Mother Nature. I was trying to sleep, dude. I guess it could have happened at 4 in the morning, it really would have freaked us out.
Yes, it
but,
would.
There we were, and
it's
I said
only like it's like 3 feet in diameter.
Yeah.
So you get up, you get up over 10, and then that starts breaking windows.
Ah, okay. Oh, with the sound,
the diameter. Yeah. Most of them just kind of disintegrate.
Yeah,
before
usually
they
warn us about that stuff. Yeah. Joining us on the program right now, astronomer at large, and it's the KSL Sports Department's own astronomer, Jeremiah Jensen, on the program here with us. JJ, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, long time fan of the stars.
Do you ever like commiserate sports and weather? You guys ever talk shop with each other?
Oh yeah, they do.
Commiserate. That's a big word
for Scott for sure.
Was it the right word?
So. I think so. Okay. I think the commiseration that we have each and every Friday is will the weather impact the sporting events we're covering. So in that way, yes, we do commiserate quite a bit. Yeah.
There you go. Well, first weekend in high school sports. Anything that jumped out of the gates that we should be aware of in these teams? I saw the Davis-Lehigh score, and I went, oh, Lehigh's not messing around in that 5A title defense.
Nope, Lehigh's still the team to beat in 5A, although there are some really good 5A teams that are going to give them a run. Tim Few, taking Lone Peak to the woodshed was a shock. Lone Peak, the defending 6A champs, and Tim Few beat him by 20 points.
Yeah, big
so
shocker.
That was something to be aware of. Stansberry is really good. They put 72 on Pineview. That's a team to look out for. They've got some really good talent. Easton Baker is going to BYU. Matiaki Halu is going to Utah. So that's a team out near Tooele that has a lot of talent.
And, are they 5A now?
Those are two. They are 5A, yes. Mm-hmm. And they're not just 5A. They're a 5A contender, in my opinion. They're a team to be taken seriously. So those are a few of the teams that really stood out week one. And I'll also say that Corner Canyon, Sky Ridge, American Fork, those teams are still powerhouses. Region 4 is still runs the show. So,
it's the SEC of Utah high school football.
Who's the Big Ten then?
It just means more down in Utah County.
So
we've got Region 4 speed.
When you watch this every year, and you've been doing this for a long time, can you tell like immediately who the good teams are, or do teams emerge during the season that you're not really aware of?
Oh, no. You see teams that develop and get better as the season comes along. I mean, I'm going to use last year an example. We all thought Corner Canyon was going to be a juggernaut, and it was inevitable that they were going to win another 6A state championship. Well, Lone Peak came out of nowhere. They're obviously a very established program, but as the season went on, they had a little bit of a slow start out of the gate.
Right.
But they upset Corner Canyon in the middle of the season. We're like, oh wow, that was a shocker. And then by the end of the year, they were the best team in the state. So. Yeah, you come into a season with assumptions, and Scott, as you know, this as a former high school football coach, you know you're dealing with kids. And so
I was reminded of it every day, Jeremiah.
It takes some time.
Very different.
For these things to develop, and sometimes they never do. Other times you've got a special group that just from day one it gets it. They've got great leaders and is ready to go. But you are dealing with kids at different levels of maturity, and things can happen. Things can change pretty quickly. So the fun thing about high school football, especially in this state, is there is a great deal of unpredictability. Every now and again, there's that juggernaut, you know, Corner Canyon. Man, they had some great teams recently. But that helps. I mean, that forces other teams to raise their level, and I think that's happened in this state over the time. I mean, I go back to, you know, 15 years ago when I started covering high school. Well, I guess it's 17 years now, my goodness, since I started covering high school football in the state. Man, the level of football that's played here has gone way up, and the depth of teams and great coaches has gone up, and the community support has gone up as well. So Utah per capita has turned into quite a high school football hotbed, and it's fun to cover it.
Who's the best player?
Best player in the state of Utah. Yeah. That is a great question this year. Oh, man. You know, there's the Iconic kid. It's Sky Ridge might be the top-ranked recruit. He's somebody to look out for. I think everybody knows there's another Wilson at Corner Canyon, just a junior quarterback. That's a lot of pressure he's got to fall in the footsteps of his brothers. But that's a kid that after week one looks the part. I don't know that there's like a stud number one, no question about it, number one guy this year. There's not that five-star guy this year. There's just a lot of depth of talent. And there could be somebody that emerges as that number one guy. I mentioned Ethan Baker over at of Stansbury. BYU's getting a good one. I mean, he's been a monster since he was a freshman. And Montieki Halu is another kid over there that has that kind of star power that's going to Utah. So there's not that one kid, but, man, I could list 20 or 30 kids. I could keep going. I know we all have time. I could keep going on all the kids and talent that's in the state. So there's going to be some gems that one of these teams in the state or somebody out of state is able to find. There's plenty of guys. There's kids already committed to Oregon, Stanford, et cetera. So another stellar class once again.
Let's talk a little bit about the college teams, of course, across the state having scrimmages. Utah State had their last scrimmage of the fall camp to get ready for their game. They're going to be playing football next week, my heavens. This is they're into full game prep mode, and we're not that far off with Utah and BYU doing the same thing. Utah and BYU both had their first scrimmages of the fall. We didn't see a lot out of Utah. BYU was nice enough to post at least a couple of field-level highlights or whatever you wanted to call those that they've sent out. Any impressions out of scrimmages from both Utah and BYU? Did we learn anything, or is the best news just that guys aren't hurt?
I think, number one, that's what – I mean, we know these teams, right? I mean, is there any surprises? There's not a quarterback battle. There's not anything like that going on, so – we're very familiar with who BYU and Utah are, and Utah State for that matter. I feel pretty good about, outside of the new receivers, I feel like I know who Utah State is. And I feel it's strange that they're being overlooked in the Mountain West this year. But back to BYU and Utah, we know who these teams are. As long as these guys stay healthy, I just don't think that there's a lot of question marks for either team. There should be success this year. I think that's the biggest thing. How are these teams handling this attention? You know, you may be asking me here soon about the poll, so I won't go into it in depth, but both teams are in the top 25 to start the season. It's not very often this has happened. And so how do they handle those expectations? Can they stay healthy? I think that's the question. As long as those two things happen for both teams, then the sky's the limit for both. I really believe that. I think both teams have the potential to have special seasons, which should be exciting for both fan bases. And I'll let both fan bases argue about who has the best chance to be special. And that's what's so fun about it, right? We have something to look forward to and argue about and all that kind of stuff. It's fun. It's almost here. I don't know much about the scrimmages because that's the way they want it. I know that can be frustrating for fans. I know you want to know. We do too as the media, but that's just how it is. What I do know is I know who these teams are, and I know how good they can be this season as long as those two things happen.
So not only are you a commiserator, but you're also a savant, JJ, because I was going to ask you about the rankings. The AP came out today, and you knew that. So what are your initial thoughts? You know, is this BYU is, of course, in the top 25, Utah's at 7. Initial thoughts about the AP poll?
It's great for college football in the state. I think it's a great show of respect. Even Utah State getting votes. I think it's awesome. I mean, we ended last year with the first time that all three teams had been in the final AP poll season. That would never happen before. And here we are again with even greater expectations. I think that for Utah at number seven, I'll really focus on this because I think it's more significant. It really puts them in a position to do something very special. As long as they handle their business, they're already at number seven, guys. And I know that all the college football playoff rankings are what matters, but when you start the year at seven, and let's say you open the season with the win at the Swamp and you beat USC in mid-October, where are you going to be in those first college football playoff rankings? You're going to be pretty darn high, which gives them a great chance to sneak in there. I won't even say sneak. I don't think it's going to be any bit of a surprise this year, but this team has the potential to put the Pac-12 in the Pac-12 in the college football playoff for the first time in quite a while. So that's all there, and the table set for them because of this ranking, because of all the hype. They just have to deliver on it, and I feel like that team has the maturity to handle those expectations, and I think they have the talent to deliver, and they have the coaching to deliver. So it just sets them up for something really special. And I'll say BYU as well. Being in the top 25 to start the season is great, and they have the schedule to be able to prove themselves to do the same thing as well, to do something special. What that is, we'd have to find out. They'll have to earn it, but you look at Oregon on the schedule, Notre Dame, Baylor. Baylor's a top 10 team. Notre Dame's a top 10 team. Arkansas's in that top 25. Oregon's in that top 25. Boise State's knocking on the door. Those are good teams. And I'll throw Utah State in there. Those are really good teams BYU's going to have to play this year. And, if they run the gauntlet there, if they're able to do that, then they'll earn it. And they'll earn that recognition nationally. So the opportunity is there for both programs to have special seasons. And the poll just shows us just how big of an opportunity it is and that it's there. It's there for the taking.
I think one of the best things that you guys do on TV for the KSL sports side of things is the locals in the NFL. I think that especially this time of year, it's hard to keep track. And so that's why you earn the big bucks, JJ, because you'll keep track of these guys. And I think that over a weekend, and especially these first weekends with the undrafted guys or whomever, what were the names that stood out this weekend in their first preseason games in the NFL, and who's looking like they might be earning a spot on a 53-man roster, or who, or the solidified guys who are obviously already been in the league maybe? Who stood out this weekend?
Yeah, I'll try to run through some names quickly. There's quite a lot, so I'll try to keep it brief. But the guys that really stood out, I have to start with Tyler Huntley. He continues to impress as the backup quarterback for the Ravens. It's just a matter of time before he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's that good. Then I go Jalen Warren. If you'll remember, graduate of East High School, went to Utah State for a while. Snow College, he's had quite a path to get to the NFL, ended up at Oklahoma State his senior year. He was awesome on Saturday, and he's looking like he's going to earn a roster spot as an undrafted free agent with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that's a good one. Simi Fehoko out of Brighton High School, played at Stanford. He caught a touchdown pass in week one against the Denver Broncos. He's been outstanding in camp. I joked with him on Twitter. I reached out to him and joked with him that every time I get on Twitter, I feel like there's a new Simi Fehoko catch from practice in my Twitter timeline. He's been making plays throughout, and it looks like he's going to have a breakout year after having to sit and watch last year.
He's at Dallas, right? Fehoko?
He is with the Cowboys. He's with the Cowboys, and they're in need of a receiver. There's playing time there. So that's somebody to watch. Julian Blackman back from an Achilles. He looks as good as he was before. It's amazing. He's been to an ACL and Achilles the last 3 years, and he still looks like he's never had an injury. It's amazing. I'm going to keep going down the line. Tyson Williams with BYU has found a home with the Colts. I think he's got a chance to stick there. Zach Moss looks as good as he has in an NFL uniform with the Bills. He ran hard and played really well. Dax Milne had a really nice game with the Washington Commanders. I'm still getting used to that. I could keep going, guys. There's just so many that are doing really well. We're at the point where we have so many players from the state of Utah that are in the NFL, and not only in the NFL, but having success. So it is a joy to watch them, and many of them I've gotten to know, and from the high school level even. So it's pretty cool. It's a joy to see that, and I hope everyone that follows these kids and has for a long time enjoys seeing their success.
Anything about Britton Covey?
Oh, so yeah, he so there was fear that he had
done some damage to his thumb. I guess he mentioned that he may have torn some ligaments in his thumb. Well, head coach Nick Sirianni said on Sunday that it's just a sprain. There's no ligament damage. So Covey's going to be fine. Obviously, Zach Wilson's a bigger concern. He has got surgery tomorrow to repair that meniscus. We don't know when he's going to be back. They'll know once the surgery is taking place, but that would be a big setback for Zach, who looked like he was ready to have a breakout sophomore year. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah, I've done both my meniscus, and they it just depends, because like one I was up the next day, and the other one took a week or so. It's just kind of how you respond to it. But so this week, you got high school football again, and what are some of the fun matchups to look for there?
So our Game Night Live game of the week is Farmington and Bountiful. It's the Region 1 favorites, Farmington, taking on the Region 5 favorites, Bountiful. It's a 6A versus 5A game. So we're excited about that. It's going to be a great game. I'm actually here right now at Farmington High School. I just spoke to Daniel Coates, former BYU and Cincinnati Bengals tight end that I know a lot of you remember. He's now the head coach of Farmington. He's done a great job with this program, turning this small young school into a contender quite quickly. So it's been fun to watch that. So that's our game of the week. There's a lot of other good games. There's a sneaky good 2A game at Summit Academy. The San Juan Broncos are the 2A champs. They're going to be playing Summit Academy. So you have games from 6A all the way down to 2A that are going to be really intriguing. So a lot of good games to watch, and we'll have it all covered for you on Game Night Live this weekend. Well, there are games at 7 o'clock on Friday, and then we have half-hour highlight show Saturday at 6 p.m. You can watch our stream at KSLSports.com or the KSL TV app or KSL Sports app. So we got you covered there.
JJ, what's going on, I guess, across the week of KSL Sports Live for you guys? And it's going to be a big one, obviously, kind of prepping for the impending college football season and everything. This is kind of a little bit of the calm before the storm, but what are you guys going to be doing this week?
Very, very deep dive into college football. We're going to be at camps. We're going to have sound bites from all the teams. We've got Utah today. We've got BYU tomorrow. Utah State as well. Even Weber State was number 20 in the coaches poll today in FCS. So I think that's a team that's going to surprise some people this year with how good they are. So we are laser focused on football right now, which is fun. It's that time of year, high school and college and NFL as well.
You know, you mentioned something earlier about the potential of some really special seasons with these college football teams in Utah, Utah State, BYU, and Utah. And you mentioned Utah being so high in the polls so early on. And I mean, if they have a special year like you're talking about, it's not even just getting into the playoffs. You know, it's not being that fourth team. I mean, potentially they could be like the number two seed or the number three seed. And then that would probably put them out in Arizona at the Fiesta Bowl if they were to make the call. Again, I'm talking specialty seasons here, as opposed to, okay, we barely made it in, and now we got to play the number one team in the country, maybe Alabama. Instead, we're a 2-3 game, and it's close to home. And that could even be more special.
Absolutely. I think that, why just settle for sneaking in at number four, right? I mentioned sneak earlier, and I felt like I was doing them injustice because I don't think they're sneaking up on anybody this year. But why settle for the number four? Why can't you jump up there and get a 2 or a 3? We'll see how things shake out. I mean, the SEC is tough. Maybe they beat each other up. I don't know. So that's the fun thing about the year is we have no idea what's going to happen. You saw it last year with, Alabama took an L at Texas A&M, and then they came back and gave Georgia one back. So, these teams play each other, and we'll see how that all shakes out. But if Utah's going to do that, I think they'd have to run the table. I think one slip up doesn't eliminate them at all from college football playoff contention, but maybe it would eliminate them from 1 through 3. I don't know. We'll have to see. Yeah. I guess it depends on who that slip up is. But the table's set there, and why not shoot for the stars? I think this team's good enough, and they have enough talent, and they proved a lot last year, and I think they're ready to do even more this year.
Jeremiah Jensen, KSL5 Television. Catch him every night, of course. He and Sam Farnsworth, some iteration of those two guys during the week on KSL Sports Live. We'll catch you then. JJ, thanks for hanging out, man.
You got it. Yep. See you guys next week.
There you go. JJ, Jeremiah Jensen. Is there anybody who hustles more this time of year? Maybe Scotty G.
Well, you know, they are sports people, and it is that time of season.
I know,
season
we shouldn't feel
sports,
bad for them, right? We go, oh, man, just working. I mean, he's working so hard watching all that football.
I mean, I work 6 days a week in the fall.
Hey, listen, you're climbing up in the polls, all right? Like, you were low. You were.
I mean, what more do I have to do?
Look, if you have a good opening week at Florida, Scott, you could really have a good season. It's maybe a special season for you. That's good.
Could you imagine that scenario where Utah's like 2 or 3 and they play a team, they win, and they actually go play in the national championship? And to actually, I mean, I'm just very selfishly thinking, and I would get to go to both of those. That would be special.
Do you get a +1?
Yeah, you want to go?
Yeah, heck yeah, man.
All right.
I think if Utah goes to the national championship game, if Utah goes to the college football playoff,
yeah,
I'd have a hard time thinking that we wouldn't all be there anyway.
It's going to be a lot of folks there.
All right. Let's take the break here. We'll come back. That was The Cut, brought to you by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org for more information. We're going to take the break here. We'll come back. Zach Wilson suffered a knee injury over the weekend. Hey, guess who else had some problems with the old meniscus? The menisci? What are they? Plural? The menisci?
They're meese. One is a mouse.
The meniscuses?
All right. Meese.
All right. Mice. We'll take a break. I dated a girl in college. Her last name was meniscus. We'll come back. More to come on the program. We will discuss what that looks like and what the team is going to do. Heavens.
What's looks like? You dating a girl named meniscus? Or clarify for me, please.
No.
We're going to talk about Zach Wilson's knee.
Yes.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Not your dating habits?
No. Heavens, no. All right, we'll come back. More to go. Unravel continues, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
Presented by G2G Bars on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Yeah, he's on his way to LA to have his procedure, and then we wait.
What are you thinking in terms of time frame?
They'll know more once they get in there. We're optimistic, but he's not out of the woods until they get in there and make the decision.
Robert Saleh, head coach of the New York Jets, miffed, obviously, after the Zach Wilson injury on Friday. It was a weird one to watch, Scott. Welcome back, by the way. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Weird injury to watch because as I see it happen, I just assume that it's worse than even that. The possibility of there even being having him not out more. I just assumed it was an ACL tear, you know, when I saw it.
Right.
And yeah, I just keep thinking.
It looked like it could have been a lot worse.
But they don't know. And I guess they'll go in and you've had a bone bruise.
I haven't had a bone bruise.
Oh, you thought maybe you had.
Well, no.
You've had the meniscus trimmed, though, haven't you?
Okay, so, yes, I've had both of my meniscus done, and not while I was playing football, by the way. And I never had a surgery that, you know, where when I was playing on my knees. But I was watching, actually, a discussion specifically about Zach Wilson's injury with an orthopedic surgeon. And he just talked about that the bone bruise could be the most painful part about all this, where the bones actually collide with each other and cause some actually bruising and swelling. But the meniscus is actually a very, I would say a lot of guys in the NFL at one point or another will have some kind of meniscus work done. And depends on if it's on the inside or the outside of the meniscus, because it's like this little ring that sits between your upper, you know, and lower bones in your body, and it's just like a cushion. And if it's on the inside, they go in and trim it off. It's on the outside, they just repair it. And it's, you know, the recovery is actually pretty quick.
The whole thing is everybody's just hoping that he's back. Well, he'll be back. Want to be back for the beginning of the season, but
yeah.
But I mean, like, if he does get back for the beginning of the season, he also misses out on all these live reps that he's getting. Does it matter, though? You've talked about how camp doesn't really matter, but the live reps in a year two for a quarterback, that's a massive deal. And I think losing out on that is the part that really, really sucks. And the part where he just feels like he's been injured a lot, you know, in the last 4 years.
When you're a young quarterback, that practice matters. Training camp matters. You can't get enough reps. This to me is the most challenging thing for Zach Wilson is that he needs game reps. He needs to see the speed. He needs to make game decisions. He needs to be in you know game situations. The thing that concerns me though is Zach Wilson has proven pretty much every year. I guess what his last year at BYU he was healthy, but he's had a lot of injuries through the years. And a lot of them have been in situations where maybe he's trying to do a little bit too much, and he has this, you know, very confident attitude, which is great, and you have to have that. But there's also a discretion that comes with that, and just on the play that he got hurt on, he's cutting back to the inside of the field, and I know it's like great and wonderful, you want to be that guy, but you also want to be the guy to play the next down. And it's a preseason game. It's not going to mean anything. I think Zach Wilson's already established himself as the players are believing in him. You know, unfortunately, some of his off-field things have created that perception. So don't be stupid. And especially early on in the very first preseason game. I know it's hard for a young guy with all that adrenaline. You're out there on the field. It's hard to manage that stuff. But it's not, and you go through it enough, and you learn. Don't try to be a hero on this play right here, especially in the preseason. You've got to be able to be healthy throughout the regular season, and that's kind of always been my concern with Zach is that he's a guy that's going to go, and he's not built in a way that can withstand, nor does he want to. You don't want to take all those unnecessary shots. You just don't. So I'm just a little concerned with it.
Well, I think most people see kind of what had happened, and Robert Saleh talking about how much of a setback this could be. So if getting all excited about this team has been, I mean, I allowed myself to go, man, I really want to see what he does year two. And I think that we've been seeing a better Zach Wilson, even with all the off the field stuff that has been a massive distraction. It seems like it hasn't distracted him. You know, it's like he's got some really good people who kind of keep him insulated from all that because it's been drama-filled, to say the least. I mean, you think about it. You think about all the things that have been floating around this guy in the offseason. It's just stuff that none of these players would want to have to address, and none of them have to address it anywhere near anything like this. This is wholly unique to – but drama's not unique to any of these to these players. But this type of drama is high, high drama. And I think that most people look and see, well, Zach Wilson, I don't know how he's going to handle it. But having this kind of happen, if you're Coach Robert Saleh, you just at some point you feel like the Jets are just doomed. And they're doomed every year to some extent. And so I don't know. Well, I don't know how this thing's going to end.
Here's what's hard for Zach Wilson right now is they're saying a month. Okay, so that's all of training camp. It might be a game or two into the season. Yeah. I mean, we're the 15th of August. The first game's on September 11th. So that's a month. Roughly, you know, just short of a month. And it's like, fine, you're healthy, but the training camp speed and the preseason speed, very different from the regular season speed. If you remember a year ago when everything was vanilla, and Zach Wilson was in preseason, he was looking pretty good because no one was really showing you anything. And then all of a sudden you get into the regular season and it goes 900 miles an hour and they're doing all these crazy things. And you're like, where did all this come from? So here you've been injured. You haven't really had that buildup to the regular season where you're practicing a lot. You're getting in preseason games. You're getting used to that, you know, close to that speed. And then you're going, you know, from basically 0 to 60 in 2 seconds when you get into the regular season. And a veteran guy, a guy who's been through it a lot, fine, he can handle it. But a young guy, he's in his second year, with all the pressure, all the expectation that's on Zach Wilson, that's a harder thing to deal with. The upside to this is a year ago, the Jets didn't have anybody. Like they had Zach Wilson. They didn't have a quarterback. And now you got Joe Flacco, who's going to get more reps, going to get all the reps with the first team, going to be the first team guy, probably going to start the season as the starter. And you're a quarterback and you go into camp and you all of a sudden are thrust into being the starter, that's about as easy a way for you to ease into a season than you go into a season as a backup. You don't see any action till like halfway through the season. So all that work you got in preseason kind of goes out the window and you're rusty. And this way, man, you go right into the regular season and he's going to get comfortable with the system. I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Flacco doesn't look pretty good and doesn't play, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he plays very well this year. And I also, Zach Wilson will watch this. And so now Zach Wilson is behind a guy who's won a Super Bowl, who I think is a very good underrated quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
And he's going to get a chance to watch his demeanor, watch how he is in games, watch how he is in practice, and watch how he handles situations. And some light bulbs are going to go on for Zach Wilson. He's going to go, oh, I need to kind of mellow out in this situation. Or, okay, that's smart. Or I get that. He'll just start seeing how Joe Flacco handles situations and throws and games and it'll be an education. So in some ways it will be good for Zach because he didn't have that a year ago. And not only didn't he have that, he didn't have a coach that could walk him through and talk him through so much of this stuff. You know, he's on his own. And so, you know, maybe this is a blessing in disguise for Zach Wilson to kind of have someone show him the ropes a little bit as opposed to just and Zach's that kid. He's like, I got this. I know how to do all this. And
right.
And
but it's one thing to have. But Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl. You always talk about how he probably is still good enough to be a starter somewhere in the league. And then there's a difference between that and Mike White, who came in for him last year, who was like this just flashing.
One hit wonder.
Had one really, really good game. But then other than that, kind of fell off the planet. So there's a difference there. And I think that part of it is your young quarterback being able to look at a guy and go, oh, no, this guy I trust. This guy actually – I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much he'd want to actually hear from Joe Flacco or how much Joe Flacco wants to, you know, dole out advice-wise. We had this whole discussion during the offseason about whether or not a veteran quarterback needs to even be, the guiding light for a young quarterback. It doesn't necessarily need to happen. They could just be that guy anyway. I don't think there's that back and forth in I don't think it matters as much in New York. I think that the Jets, and I think that Zach Wilson is way more mature than whatever the back and forth that happened there in Tennessee was. When you see the preseason and you see these things happen over the weekend and you have these guys who are on the cusp of making, I know that your first year you were nervous about, or how long was it until you figured out, okay, I'm actually going to make this what was it back then? A 48-man roster, I think,
yeah.
It was probably during your day. So a 48-man roster. At what point were you like, oh, shoot, I'm actually going to be the guy?
Well,
the guy is in the backup.
So I went into things with that in my mind. Like, I just never thought of it any other way. Like, there never was a moment where I go – I mean, I got drafted, and 2 days after the draft, I was in South Florida for a mini camp. And that mini camp, I was spinning. I go, I am not going to be able to do this. I have no idea.
What was the hardest part? Was it the learning of the system?
The
or
speed,
what was it?
Not knowing anything. Dan Marino was amazing. Like I was just like, I can't do that.
I was thinking to say, Dan Marino was a jerk.
No. He was just so good.
Right.
Like I'd never seen anything so good.
How does it turn around from going, oh man, this is too much?
So
for
you're
me,
there
to
for
suddenly
you're there for 3 days.
I belong here.
You're there for 3 days.
Uh huh.
And then I went home. So I was basically drowning that first 3 days, just full of self-doubt, full of like, I can't do this. I went home.
Yeah, your credit card stolen.
And then I was home for, I think, 2 weeks. And then
what
I went.
What did you do in that gap?
When I went home,
that gap?
I worked out harder than I ever have in my entire life.
You're like, this
I'm
is
just
serious.
Like,
Mom, this is serious.
But I had an NFL football, which I got to throw around, and that was
cool.
That
was different.
Right. And I got some sweatbands and a hat, you know, a hat. I thought I was pretty cool.
Oh my god!
But I just had a moment. I just said, you know, this stinks because you thought you were going to be in a different place and you thought you were going to get drafted.
Right.
But this is your opportunity. Like it was just this very come to the realization that this is your situation, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I owned it. I just said, I'm going to Miami to be the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. And that's what I went back to Florida with after 2 weeks. And then I spent the whole entire summer there. I got a chance to work and to learn the offense. And we had I had practice every day.
But you had a roommate wasn't at minicamp. Was it at training camp?
When he so
was
at like, training camp.
Hey, man, you're not going to make the team, bro.
So he came out in the summer. So we were kind of hanging out a little bit in the summer. But then he came to training camp, and we had the same agent. So he was a player. He played 5 years in the NFL, and we had the same agent. And that was just by coincidence that we actually became roommates. Yeah. And he told my agent, because my agent asked him, he goes, well, what do you think of Scott? It's, you know, and my roommate told my agent, he's not going to make the team.
Oh, wow.
And the reason, he goes, he's too nice. and my...
This Utah kid, he's coming out, he's getting a fist full of dirt, man. Yeah,
and so I made the team and my roommate didn't.
Oh, boy. 5 years in the league, he didn't make the team?
No, he didn't make the team. But it really was that mindset. And then the first game I played in, I was terrible. It was against the Chicago Bears preseason game. I was like... I think I was 6 for 20.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh that much.
Well, no, because it was terrible. You know, it was like it was awful. And then the next week we played Tampa Bay, and it just clicked.
Started getting a little.
It
bit
just
better.
Boom. And I would say that's probably the moment in that game because I played really well, and I was like, and I felt it. You know, I felt that fire. I felt, and then just after that, it was just
like I can do this.
It was just like lights out. But I never in a moment past that first 3 days, I never ever even questioned in my entire career if I'm going to make it, if I'm going to get cut. That never entered my mind.
I love the idea of a guy going, oh, Scott? Yeah, he's not making the team, dude. Bring your playbook, Mitchell, because you're not making the team, kid. Did you find that out like way after, or was it like that?
No, after I'd made the team.
My agent came down
and he goes, you know, Beatty said, he goes, he didn't think you'd make the team. He thought you were too nice. He goes, isn't that funny that you now made the team?
And he didn't. Wow. What position did he play?
He was a tight end.
Oh. All right.
But he did come back about 3 weeks into the season.
Yeah, of course.
I actually went to the airport and picked him up.
Oh.
And he stayed in my townhouse. For a while.
Did he apologize ever?
He never knew that I knew.
Yeah, okay. That's funny.
And he ended up playing for the Dolphins for like 4 or 5 years.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, and so we were seatmates on the airplane.
There you go. Davis Vision Summer LASIK Sale going on now. Get rid of those contacts, glasses, and save $1,000. Davis Vision also offers routine eye exams, full-service optical center for prescription glasses, frames, contacts, and the full line of sunglasses. Go to DavisVisionMD.com. That's DavisVisionMD.com. Take advantage. Get $1,000 off that LASIK. We'll come back. When we come back around the corner. Oh, we got a little college football countdown around the corner. We'll see what goes on here. We got the actual days of the countdown. Man, it's getting to be a lot less. Every weekend, it takes away even more. So we'll come back. We'll chat about that and more to go. Unravel continues 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past for anybody that's ever coached with him.
The Utah Utes headed to the Rose Bowl for the first time in program history. Emphatic champions of the Pac-12 as they hammer the Ducks again.
For BYU and all of its fans, it was Big 12 weekend. And after a 12-year wait, it's a big win for the Cougs over their in-state rivals. 10 is not coming.
The final countdown. The final countdown.
Here we are counting it down, the final countdown of our college football season as we get down to it. I'll actually miss this. I mean, we're only 12 days from Utah State and UConn. Playing the final countdown music every day. One, it reminds me of Arrested Development and Job. And then two, it gets me excited for college football season. 12 days to Utah State, UConn, as I said. 19 days to Utah and Florida.
19 is a good number.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I knew it. You know what? I didn't prepare enough for this during show prep, Jeremy. Because remember, initially you put that it was 29, and then Scott's like, oh, it's actually 19. I should have read the tea leaves there that we were going to have
you know, 19's a pretty good number. Hurt.
It's a good number.
It's also the worst quarterback number.
No, it's not. 17 is the worst quarterback number. Everybody knows that.
Was there ever a good 17?
No.
All right.
Jim Hart.
All right.
How about, well.
I don't know who any 17s were.
You know, the guy Phillip Rivers.
Oh, yeah. He's pretty good. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Still 19. Johnny Unitas.
Is Dave Craig 17?
Oh, boy. I think Dave Craig might have been 17.
You know, watching Dave Craig highlights, he wasn't that bad.
Well, you can't play a cajillion years in the league and throw for 40,000 yards. Dude's out of Milton College. When I was a kid.
Milton College does not exist.
It's not a thing.
How sad would that be?
Yeah, I went
like
to
your,
what
your
school
college
did you go
is
to?
Gone.
Well, I was in their Hall of Fame, but they actually the school disappeared overnight. So they don't have a football program anymore. Or they just the school doesn't. Exist?
School?
No, it doesn't.
Look it up.
The school doesn't exist anymore.
No, it does. It's gone.
Closed in 1982.
Yes,
I think he closed them out.
Probably dead.
Bottom line is, Dave Craig was in fact number 17.
He was a sneaky guy too.
I don't know if he does anymore, but he led the.
He was this aw shucks guy, and
he led
know.
The NFL when I was so as a Seahawks fan growing up. You just were like, Dave Craig, you're like close to being a pretty good player, but he led the. I think he was the career fumbles leader in the NFL for a good stretch. So
he'd hold on to that football. I mean, he'd sit in the pocket for a while, hold on to it.
I just had to make. He had to make sure Steve Largent got open. That's what the deal was. All right, so there you go. BYU in South Florida, also 19 days away. Scott, the playoff situation looks like, I think it's pretty, I mean, I don't think there's anybody who really looks and goes, oh, BYU could be a playoff contender, except for, who was it last week that said it? Was it?
Biamonte?
No. It was Mike Felder. Michael Felder, when he came on the show, he goes, oh, BYU, if they go 11-1 or better, they're going to the college football playoff. I said, no, this article is a little bit more along the lines of how BYU can get involved in the playoff.
But
and that's ruining Oregon's chance. It's ruining Baylor's chance. It's ruining Notre Dame's chance. That's how you, if BYU's going to get involved in the playoff, Utah fans, you better pray that BYU wins all those games.
Well, hold on just a second.
No.
Yes.
Yo,
No.
You need to respect the fact that BYU holds the key, or at least a little bit of a key to your success this season, Utah. Hold on. I'm just going to give some ammo to BYU fans for a minute. Roll it out there. Hey, Utes, you need BYU this year. They got to beat Notre Dame if they're in front of you. All right?
Yes.
Let it happen. Big 12 champion Baylor could possibly stand in the way.
Yes.
Pac-12 runner-up from last year, Oregon. Oregon could stand in the way. Let's get it. Let's let BYU do some work for you. You should be cheering on BYU in those games, and in those games only. Or can you not bring yourself to that, Utah fan?
No.
Wake
BYU
up.
BYU doesn't. They're not going to cheer for BYU. Utah's not going to cheer for BYU. They're not.
If it came down to it, and like you needed that W.
Well, that's
BYU
a different story.
That's what I'm saying. BYU and Notre Dame. On the, 8th of October or the 16th of October, whatever it is, if Notre Dame is highly ranked and they're in front of Utah and they stand in the way, because that will have meant that Notre Dame has already beaten Ohio State, okay? And you need that work to be done because maybe Ohio State's going on another tear like they did last year if they won a game.
This is a nice story. Yeah, this is a nice story.
I'm giving scenarios. That's all I do.
I know, but here's what I think the people at BYU inside that building believe. I don't think they wake up every day to go to fall camp. I don't think they worked all off season to go, how can we disrupt the college football playoffs? I don't think that even crosses their mind. I don't even think they go, yeah, we want to be.
No, disrupting the college football playoffs is a total. Nobody goes, we could go out there and ruin other people's seasons, make their season better.
I actually believe, and it's based on when we went to BYU Media Day. Mm-hmm. I think these guys think they're going to make a run at the college football playoffs.
Why not?
They have a hard enough schedule. That's where I think they look at this.
Mitch brought it up. Mitch Harper was on the show earlier, and he goes, you're going to be playing – at some point you're playing an Arkansas team that won 9 games last year and has to play an SEC West schedule. That's no freaking slouch, right? Like they are going to be coming to Provo – as maybe the better team, maybe the best team that we've seen playing at Provo in I don't know how long.
Maybe Baylor might be better.
Oh, I don't know. This year, not as much as last year.
They were good a year ago. The reality is, though, is everyone goes, well, BYU schedule's tough, but it's also a better schedule than they had a year ago as far as it proved to be, you know, that schedule wasn't as hard as maybe this one's going to be, but this is a schedule that could legitimately put BYU in contention for the college football playoffs. It's unfortunate that they start at 25. You know, if they started somewhere, 17, then it's maybe an easier deal for them. You got to remember, this is a team that goes, they go 2 years ago, they go, we were a game away from being a college football playoff contender. And really their game against Boise State, that they fumbled that game away at home, they win that game, and it's a different scenario. They're possibly a New Year's Six team. They're possibly a team that goes to the college football playoffs because no one wanted to get there last year. If you remember, there was no one wanted to be that fourth team, and they certainly didn't want to give it to Cincinnati, and BYU clearly had a tougher schedule than Cincinnati had. And, you know, so they have one loss on the season, BYU. Then they're in some serious discussions for things, and I think these players saw that. They go, look how close we were. And so when you're that close that many times, you go, why not us? Like, this isn't beyond us. This isn't over our head. We're not this just little independent school here. We're going to be a Power 5 school. Fine, we have a tough schedule, but we got a good football team. Why not us? And that's what I think they believe in that building. And I don't think at any point they're going to go, yeah, we want to disrupt anything. We want to get in.
All right, let's take the break. I like your attitude, Scott. Always shooting for the stars there. We'll come back. We've got ourselves some sound from camp across Utah, BYU. You're going to hear some of the players and the coaches and their comments on that first fall scrimmage from BYU and Utah over the weekend. Stay right here with us. More to go here on the program. Stop playing tobacco's game. Control your future. Free nicotine patches and nicotine gum at waytoquit.org. Waytoquit.org. Come back. More to go. Unrivaled continues. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for being with us. You have a coin, Scott?
In my pocket?
Yeah.
No.
Nobody has coins these days. I'm kind of glad, to be honest. I'm kind of over the coins, but I wanted to do a coin toss. Is there an app? I guarantee there's like 50. You know what there also is probably an online coin flip. All right, so let's do it. You ready? I'm going to do a coin flip.
You're doing a coin flip.
Yeah. We're going to start the show off as we always do.
Okay.
Unrivaled brought to you by G2G Bars. Thanks for being with us on the program. If you haven't tried a G2G Bar, my heavens, get into
you're missing out.
Get into a Maverick. They have them in the refrigerated section right there. It's a protein bar that is packed with the protein that you love. They're friggin' tasty.
They're in Harmons.
Macy's, all the associated foods, they're there. And if they're not in your grocer's refrigerated section, pout until they get it. So the G2G bar is perfect for anybody for the quick, tasty, and nutritious boost. They are really good. Let me see here, Scott. Let's kick off the program as we always do. I'm going to do a coin toss, and I'll tell you what it's for in just a moment here. But let's jump into the cut right here.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The cut presented by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utah Trust. Visit uofuhealth.org. uofuhealth.org. Hey, before we get to the coin toss here, though, that I want to go with, I did find immediately like a coin flip. It's not, you don't have to go to a website. I just typed in coin flip on Google, and they have like its own widget on the, is that what you call it, Jared? Widget? Is that what people call it? Is that what the kids call it these days? The widget? Okay.
Dude, we're like the same age. What are you
talking about? Okay, sorry. I just figured you're into gambling. I thought you were such a degenerate. You'd go and just see
black, red, heads, tails.
You just bet on a coin toss online with the widgets out there. Yes, we are contemporaries. All right, here's the deal. I've got something to give away. You heard the promo there for a $20 Amazon gift card right now. You've got like 20 things in your head that you want to buy for $20 on Amazon. So let's win it right now. Courtesy of your Rocky Mountain Chevy dealers and the play of the week given out this morning on DJ and PK. If you remember what DJ and PK's pick for this week's play of the week was, then be caller number 12 right now. 801-575-5967. 801-575-5967. And give us the play of the day or the play of the weekend, and we'll give you that winner. Courtesy of the folks at Rocky Mountain Chevy Dealers. With an impressive lineup of cars, trucks, and SUVs, no wonder people are switching to Chevy. Rocky Mountain Chevy Dealers. Give me a hint, Jer, on the play of the weekend. I didn't see.
It's NFL.
Okay.
And it involves one of the two, somebody from within the state of Utah.
All right, there you go. There's your clue there. Be caller number 12, 801-575-5967. For the play of the weekend given out on DJ and PK today. Here's the coin toss, Scott. You ready? And I'll tell you what it's for.
Okay.
The coin toss is for whether or not we do BYU or Utah first.
Oh, okay.
It's the old adage. We had two. Here we go.
Tails.
Now I'm going to show it so you can actually see it. All right,
I pick tails.
Here we go.
Is that heads?
There's the flip. It's like a virtual flip here. We're watching it.
And it's
Scott
tails.
Got tails. There you go. Stop. I hate to lose even on those things. And you are a gloater on a digital coin flip, and you go, you're like my older brother. So here we go. We're going to start things off with the University of Utah. All right.
Okay.
So let's start things off here with let's go with Jim Harding, offensive line coach. That's a group, by the way, that has come a long way, and Jim Harding and his group has done a fantastic job to get up to speed in the Pac-12 and to be one of the better O-line groups there. Here's what Coach Jim Harding said after the scrimmage and what they learned and what they have to do here this season, starting right off here.
It doesn't fall on deaf ears, the frustration not only, you know, I had how my guys performed early, but also I understand that my guys didn't perform the way they should have early in the year, and I accept that, and I have learned from it. We are certainly more conscientious of making decisions and rolling with it early on in camp, where, like I mentioned earlier, there's not a lot of, hey, maybe this guy could play this spot. If there was an injury, let's make sure we have the backup position. Well, no, we have to make sure we have the starting five working together. I believe Coach Witt has referenced it in interviews as well. And he's exactly right, because we know the challenge we have in front of us.
I am so glad to hear this, because every year that, you know, I've watched Utah football, and this is not a knock on Jim Harding, because he does an amazing job. These O-lines have been incredible, and they really evolve and gel into exceptional lines. But for whatever reason, it's taken a lot of time to for them to get going in a season. And with the urgency of that first game, I'm so excited to hear this kind of news, because And it makes sense now why maybe there's that slow start, because you're trying all these different combinations out of potential players here and there and whatever, and they need that time together. They need that time to be able to communicate on run blocks and the different looks they get from the front seven, along with, you know, how they handle pass protection. And you got to trust the guy to you know, that's next to you. And if you're that guard, you got to trust a couple of guys. So it's really important that they're together and they have as much time to communicate and talk and recognize, so that they're not thinking. Because when you think, you play slow, and that's been the knock. These guys have just not come off the ball and really played with a sense of getting after it and having a sense of urgency. And that evolves and happens during the season, but it's been an Achilles heel for Utah early on. And so hopefully – and they should. I mean, I could tell you who I think the top five are right now and just go with those five and off you go, because they all started a year
ago.
Sure.
Yeah. Here's what he had to say about Florida in that first game, because even if it is a Florida program that isn't that top 10 team that sometimes you see in the preseason, it's still a really, really good team.
We recognize where we're going. I mean, this is a different deal. It's a great challenge. We're excited about it, but this is a different opener than maybe that we have had in years past. And so the clock is ticking. We're at 19 days and think it's about noon, so 7 hours on the East Coast. So we know the clock's ticking, so we got to be ready to go.
I love how he knows that good number right there.
Oh, yeah, he does. I love how he literally has the camera. What is this, Christmas for this guy? Yeah. It probably is. I mean, hey, right?
He got our beef.
He got our meat advent calendar to count down.
So this is, you know, he talks about this being a different game. This is a different game than Utah's ever played.
I mean, they've opened seasons against.
They haven't opened at an SEC when you've been the seventh ranked team in the country and you're playing Florida. Mm-hmm. There's never been a game like this. So this is, man, this is so exciting if you're a Utah fan. And I believe. Because you can overthink it too, right? You can just get in your head, oh, this is going to be a tough game. This is going to be a hard game. This is going to be, you know, humidity, hot, Florida, blah, blah, blah. And you can talk yourself into not playing very good. And that's the downside to this. And I love what Devon Vailey said. He goes, we don't want to be a team that's respected. We want to be a team that's feared. And you want to walk into Florida going, oh, crap, man, we got to play Utah. And that's when you know you're a good team, because you're already ahead by 3 to 7 points just before you step on the field, just because of that fear factor. And that's the presence I think Utah needs to have. I like that presence, but I just like the fact that they're aware that they've got to come out of the gates ready to play football.
At Michigan in 2008. Was that probably? I mean, that's a Big Ten opponent.
They won that opener,
right? That was the season opener for them. It was an August 30th, 2008 game at Michigan. Do you think that's the? That opened up, in reality, quote unquote special season, right? Because they went undefeated that entire.
Yeah.
I mean, but talk about set the tone. I don't think we talk enough about how the fact that the last time Utah went undefeated, they started at a big opponent.
Yeah.
And they started at a big place. They go to the Big Ten, they play at Michigan, and they win 25-23. And they go undefeated that entire season and win the Sugar Bowl.
And Michigan is kind of a similar type of program to like Florida. You know, they're good. They're maybe not the top program, but they're a good program. I mean, and to win at the Big House in Michigan, not many Appalachian states have done that. You know, so it's not an easy place to win. And Florida's not either.
It's kind of interesting because they prior to this, because they were in a smaller conference – in the Mountain West, they were opening up kind of big games.
Right.
And so I'm looking at some of these other ones. The other time they went undefeated, they started out hosting Texas A&M. And now Utah started off that season ranked, and they went through the entire season ranked, obviously, after they won the Fiesta Bowl. They were top, I think they were number five in the country. But here's what their opening seasons looked like after that. So they opened hosting Arizona after that. Now this is all Mountain West years. They went to UCLA in 2006, they went to Oregon State in 2007. They lost both of those games. And when they turned it around, was going to Michigan, had an undefeated season. And then after that, when they got into – they hosted Pitt in 2010 to start out the season. They won that game. And they had a really good year that year. They went to the Las Vegas Bowl, and it was a good year. Solid year for them. But once they got into the Pac-12 – then that's when you start to see your Montana States and your Northern Colorados and your Weber States and your Idaho States. I mean, they hosted Michigan to open that 2015 season, and that was a big season for them. I mean, they lost three games this year, but that was Harbaugh's first year. But Southern Utah, North Dakota, Weber State, those are all how they opened up seasons until they started playing BYU that first part of the year. And then the COVID year was whatever it was. But again, Weber State out of the last seven seasons, they played five FCS opponents to start off the year. And I think they had a slow start against BYU, and they had an even slower start against San Diego State last year after they played Weber State. Yeah. We saw a couple of things in that Weber State game. We were like, well, that's weird, right? Yeah. You saw the kick return for the touchdown. You went, that's not really a Kyle Whittingham thing. It makes a difference. So,
well, here's how you rectify that, because really it's that offensive line. I mean, that's always the slowest start for Utah. I'm a little concerned about the linebackers because they're all fresh and they're all new. And are they going to be up to that speed? Now, Mo Diabate, he's going to be up to the speed because he's played at Florida. But is he going to be up to comfort level with a new system? And you're going to have Lander Barton.
Is he totally healthy too? I mean, that's
right. And Lander Barton, you know, he's this kid that he's fresh out of high school, you know, and you know, there's going to be moments that he's just going to hesitate and not quite be up to speed and just reacting. All you have to do is put Jaron Kump at one left tackle. You put Sauatoa Lauamea.
Okay.
Paul Miley, Keaton Bills.
Those are your guards?
Yeah. And then, Orlando. I can't remember his
You're
name.
You're spacing on the name there.
Spacing on his name. Daniels. Braden Daniels.
Braden Daniels, yes.
Or did he play last year?
Oh, you're talking about, let me see here. I was looking at the depth chart actually earlier, and I was like,
And all those guys played a year ago and played very well.
Yeah, and I think that I think
and just put those guys in there and off you go.
Let me see.
Sorry, I spaced on that. I should know that. I knew it until I had to figure it out.
Yeah, let me see here. Okay. Yeah, it's Braden Daniels.
That's what
should be Braden Daniels. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to
Olesini was the guy. There.
Yeah. Let's move on to Sharif Shaw. And what he said about Clark Phillips, one of his defensive backs, who's of course having maybe a preseason unlike any Utah defensive back has had in terms of respect already. Here's what he said about Clark Phillips and how much he studies the game and how much he really, really tries hard to get better.
Clark continues to starts to master just the small things. That's what I love about him. I mean, Clark, when he first got here, we met so much, it was ridiculous. Because of the COVID year, we had so many more opportunities to visit on Zoom and talk. And he would be up here just as much as I'd be up here. I'm like, I'm at the facility, coach, I'm coming. Whether it's in the afternoon, the evening, 2 a.m, it didn't matter. He was coming. So he had an insatiable appetite from the beginning. And he fell in love with film. And I told him, I said, if you really want to become the player that you really are aspiring to, fall in love with film.
He knows what his goals were. He made it clear to everybody when he first came in, certainly.
Well, what's great for these college players is they actually can watch film. I mean, the access they have to information is just remarkable.
These players walk onto the team plane and the team buses and all these things with the film already loaded up from the game, and then even some previews of the teams that they're going to be taking on the next week. Here's moving down south, we had one scrimmage up at the University of Utah where we didn't really see any film. I didn't see any highlights or anything like that that was put out there. I really searched around to see if I could find what some actual like clips could have been out there. But BYU put out a little bit of a hit list of about 25 plays. No, maybe less, probably 10 or 15 plays that you were able to watch on YouTube, on their YouTube channel. Jaron Hall, BYU's quarterback right after everything, is kind of – I love this stuff because I can't really tell where they're at here, but because you start to sandbag a little bit and you go, hey, and it's just a kid who has high expectations, and right off the bat, he didn't really like what he saw out of the offense.
Yeah, definitely not game ready yet. We need more reps, obviously, as a team going against our defense, as many team reps as we can get, just to simulate the flow of the game, the speed of the game. The scrimmages are great for that, going through our full team routine. So I think as many snaps as we can get against our defense the next 2 weeks, leading up to game prep, I think is the most important thing for us. Everything else, you know what we're doing, we know what we're supposed to do, but it's just simulating the speed of it. Luckily, our defense, it's one of the best defense I've gone against in my 5 years at BYU.
Well, that's good to hear about the defense because we just don't hear very much about the defense.
Right.
That first scrimmage is always like that. That's why I think these guys should have a preseason game to just get all of that out. You just don't understand who you are. You don't know what you're capable about, capable of, or what your team's all about until you get out in those game situations. And I'm sure Jaron goes, oh, okay, there's full speed, or at least a higher version of any speed that we've seen in practice. Because it's not game speed. Scrimmage speed is not game speed, but it's faster. And so, you know, he's right in that you get a real sense of we need a lot more work against faster and quicker movement. And the only way you get that is in a game. So we'll see how they continue to improve. But that speed you just can never simulate in practice.
Kalani Sitake did talk about the defense, so let's jump into what he said about these new guys who are going to be on that defensive front, new guys who are just getting used to the schemes there on defense.
Our defense had some disruptive plays, had some good pressure on the quarterback. You know, it was like a give and take on both sides, but special teams look clean, over 100 total plays. it was really good what we wanted. We were able to see a lot of newcomers on the team tackle and break tackles and block and play live football. And we'll evaluate the film and see what we have, but really, really happy with the talent that we have on this team right now.
When your team has to come up to speed on defense, Scott, like you said, usually it's the other way around. In camp, you have the defense kind of progressing a lot quicker than the offense. So in BYU's case, how do you get a defense up to speed if you don't, you know, that defensive line is the weak spot of the team, according to, you know, all accounts, where it's like, well, in terms of guys who are out there, that's the part with the biggest question mark. And so how do you get a defense up to speed?
So there's two things a defense does. They pursue and they tackle. And you can't tackle. I mean, you can't get better at tackling unless you practice it. Like, you just can't, especially when you're young. And there needs to be a level of full speed, physical, learning how to tackle, learning, because you, in some regards, when you're an old veteran NFL team, it's like play to contact, you know, two-hand touch, whatever. But when you're young college kids, because you have to do it in a game, and not doing it ever, it just takes some time to get used to that. So whatever level they have to do that at, you know, like, is it the first couple of weeks? Is it once or twice a week that they go live all the way to the ground tackling? Do they tackle against the twos? You know, just anything to be able to do it. And, you know, Dan Campbell in Hard Knocks, I mean, he said, I'm just telling you, to get you ready to play, we just have to go live to some extent. We have to tackle. We have to, you know, I'm trying to protect you guys and take care of you, but you just have to do that. And, you know, and again, I think having a preseason game is kind of answers a lot of these questions we keep hearing from both Utah and BYU.
Kalani Sitake spoke to a little bit about kind of, you know, everybody wants to know, well, how are you doing compared to other years? And he addressed that a little bit. And I think that for the most part, you know, if you're a head coach, you kind of beat back a little bit of the expectations of, oh, no, this is the best team we've had. This is the best where we've been every year. And it's hard also to go, yeah, oh, we're way ahead of where we were last year. But he says that both sides seem to be ahead of where they were in previous years.
I think everybody wants to see a million points on the offense. So what I saw so far in camp, I feel like both sides are doing really well. The offense, way further ahead than they've ever been. But the good thing is that the best thing for our defense is playing against our offense. I saw improvement on our defense from day one to now. And so I feel like they've stepped up quite a bit too. I feel like it's neck and neck, and that's what you want.
Feels like it makes you a little bit nervous, right? With all this talk about, oh, the defense is coming around, they're coming around. Oh, that's a weaker part of the sides there. Well, it really makes you nervous if you're a BYU fan.
But you've got a great offensive line, a returning quarterback. That's going to be a better situation. And he's right. You know, you get a really good offensive line going up against your defense. You're going to get better. It's also part of the challenge for BYU because that's where the depth comes in, where your ones on offense and your ones on defense don't have to practice against each other to get that look if you're a deep team. You know, your twos are every bit as good as your ones. And so these teams like Alabama, that way you minimize the potential of having some kind of injury.
All right, let's take another break here, shall we? We'll come back. There's your little bit of a breakdown of what happened in both of those sides of the football at the respective camps and respective scrimmages over the weekend. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. NFL Roundup is around the corner. You don't want to miss the two-minute drill today. More to go on Rival continues. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback. And the other guy on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for being with us, Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Boy, just a whole pack. Listen, we're at the point now where college football is upon us. The NFL is almost upon us. And It's like you don't know what to do with your hands, you know? You're like, I'm standing here. What do I do with my hands now that everything starts
getting... You don't know what to do with your hands?
I just mean, like, we're standing here and we're going, oh, man, so what do I do here? This is...
I wonder what Hans does with his hands.
What Hans does with his hands.
Hans does with his hands.
We're excited about college football, and we're excited about pro football to start up, obviously. So as we get things going here, Scott, it's that time of the show where we like to fire this thing up and get the two-minute drill going. Explain the two-minute drill for those who may not be familiar with what a two-minute drill is, Scott, here.
Well, briefly, let's just listen to that music because it just gets you inspired.
The autumn wind is a pirate.
All right, well, here's what you do late in a football game. You got to go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown. Don't have a lot of time, so you hurry. Our show's the same way. Still have a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up. Finish show, go home with a participation trophy because everyone gets a trophy these days, along with a plethora of desserts, which include chocolate souffle, flan from Spain, key lime pie from Florida, gelato from Italy, baklava from that old great country of Greece.
Still on the lookout for the whorehound candy. Still haven't found any.
And nothing from Sam Farnsworth because his is disgusting.
Yeah. First things up on the old two-minute drill here, Scott. I was going to...
I was having a good day until he said whorehound, by the way.
It's a family program. We can't say those types of cuss words on there. I wanted to bring this this up, our two-minute drill. Ozzie Guillen was on the White Sox talk show on NBC there in Chicago. And, of course, he's Ozzie Guillen played for a lot of teams, but did a good stretch, of course, with the White Sox. And he was on TV describing that when he was in the organization, and Michael Jordan was also in the organization for that brief amount of time as a White Sox. And he explained that Michael Jordan, on a road trip where they were on a bus, they ran, apparently, I thought this was weird. He goes, the bus ran out of beer. That already sounds strange.
This is baseball.
But you've described to me, you know, when you guys got on the plane,
oh yeah,
everyone wanted to sit by you because you weren't going to drink your beer, so you'd hand it out. So the same kind of thing, I guess, was happening on a charter bus for the White Sox in the mid-90s.
So this is the actual White Sox.
This is the White Sox.
Oh, yeah. If it was the minor league club, that's something else. But to not have beer on the bus for the majors? Oh, yeah.
Well, here's what
that's a cardinal sin there.
Ozzie Guillen, basically, when the bus stopped and the bus had run out of beer, he forced three rookies, one of which was, of course, Michael Jordan, to go and buy beers at a local gas station. Now, I love the part of the story. It was totally run over, the part of the story where Michael Jordan has to be in a convenience store going, I'll take these cases.
Can we see some ID, please?
Well, not just that. You know there's a store guy. You know that there's a convenience store guy who goes, I knew it. Ozzie Guillen told the story. I swear, I told my friends. I saw Michael Jordan came in and bought a bunch of beer for a bunch of minor league players, and he was like, no way. Or for a bunch of major league baseball
nobody
players.
Had a phone, no. Right? No one's,
you're
no
not
one's
gonna
got
take
a phone
picture.
To take
no.
a picture of this.
So Ozzie Guillen described the whole thing, and this is what he said on the show here as well.
I just like that you told Michael Jordan to go buy some beer.
He's a rookie guy. I thought you like he was a superstar back in a basketball court in the White Sox. I was the captain. Besides me, I got Roy Ventura protecting me. He said, "Send him," and we did. You know, we playing cards, yeah. And that's the only guy who smokes cigars inside the bus.
There you go. A little peek into the Michael Jordan smoking a cigar on
Ventura,
the bus.
I got Robin Ventura backing me up.
Right. Go get it, rookie. He's a rookie guy. I just love that idea of Michael Jordan being look. And I bet he. Well, he said he brought it back to the, and he goes, and he threw him in his lap. Goes, there's your beers, you know. But then it got back to the club owner, or the general manager, and the general manager comes back and goes, Ozzie, you can't send Michael Jordan to buy beers off the bus. You're making us look bad to make one of the great athletes of all time. He goes, dude, why don't you make sure your bus doesn't run out of beer? A great story years later comes
that's
out.
That's
right?
Awesome. That does not make you look bad. It's like, and good for Michael Jordan for just going, I'll go get the beer. Hey, I'll be a rookie.
Well, the best part is the other two rookies who are with him are like, Michael Jordan's my beer was. And then he said it was actually Michael Jordan who paid for it, too. The other two guys he didn't make pay for it. I was like, okay, thankfully. I love this. At Kentucky, right now, I had no idea this was going on.
Oh, this is awesome.
Kentucky football coach Mark Stoops on John Calipari saying that this is a basketball school. Apparently, there's a little bit of a of a back and forth here because John Calipari called the university a quote basketball school. Stoops responded with a basketball school. I thought we competed in the SEC. And he starts going back and forth. And I guess that they said, and John Calipari, because so he goes to a press conference and he goes, when you start talking about my programs and others and we compete against, I don't do that, Stoops said. I stay in my lane. So that's in defense of my players, in defense of the work that we've done, and believe me, I want to continue to push. But don't demean or distract from the hard work that our kids have done to get to this point. I'm not going to apologize for that, and I will not.
Well, you shouldn't because he's right. I mean, look, Kentucky is a basketball school. Come on, it's a basketball school.
Well, no, the football coach is the one who's saying that he's not going to apologize, right?
Right. So here's the thing. Here's the thing with Mark Stoops. Okay, and he doesn't realize this. The SEC basically has paid a lot of money to Kentucky to be average. Kentucky's like one of those non-conference games that you play in the SEC.
Yeah.
It's like it's a team you pay here. We're going to give you $1 million to come play us every year. That's what Kentucky. That's what Vanderbilt is. That's what half of the SEC is. They're not. It's not a football conference.
So,
it's an Alabama Georgia conference.
Right. That's actually, you know what?
It is.
Jimbo Fisher is like, what about us? Come on.
Look, well, because God is at Alabama. He's not. You made that clear before.
Right.
It'll change, though. Okay? LSU. Somewhere LSU
will climb
up the mountain. Florida will climb up the mountain sometimes. Yeah. Tennessee probably might be on its way back up the mountain for a brief period of time. But Georgia and Alabama, that is the SEC conference.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that. So Mark Stoops is not even taking a call from John Calipari now, and the athletic department is like, we sincerely like hope that our coaches can figure this out. They're both very talented men, blah 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 blah. But the reality is that you don't have beef between a head football coach and a head basketball coach at universities ever.
No.
They're like, this is unprecedented. We've never seen this. So Mark Stoops is pouting, and John Calipari goes, I shouldn't have said that. We shouldn't compare programs. He wasn't saying it's a slight Mark.
No. He's just kind of speaking truthfully.
But again, this is what you always talk about, where it's like, find a way to have a chip on your shoulder about anything. If you want to tell your team, then we don't even get respect in our own university. Like, that might be the ultimate way of, like, pumping yourself up, right? Like,
well, yeah, and they should have a chip on their shoulder because there's a lot to be chippy about.
It is a basketball school, kids.
It is. It's been that way for eons of time.
They've competed, and they've done a good job, but Stoops said he's not going to let bickering derail the program as it prepares to open up against Miami.
Ohio.
Can I tell a personal story?
Indulge yourself. Would
okay, because it relates to the University of Kentucky. So I'm playing for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Uh huh.
We have a training camp in Georgetown, which is right next to where the University of Kentucky is.
Right.
In Lexington.
Didn't you live in Kentucky too?
I lived in Kentucky, yeah, which is basically part of Cincinnati.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, some of the players on the team have like a Saturday night off, so they go into Lexington and they end up in a bar. And they end up in the bar with a bunch of Kentucky football players.
Yeah.
And so they start, like, jawing at each other.
The NFL guys and the Kentucky football guys?
Come on. And the NFL guys end up getting, like, the crap kicked out of them.
Really?
And I'm like, man, I knew I was on a bad team. This is Kentucky. That's a basketball school. Their football players are beating up our players who are pros.
Was it the kind of thing where it was like a couple cornerbacks trying to take on a couple
linebackers?
No,
it wasn't.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, you should never tell a soul that happened, ever.
But when I'm hosting a radio show in 20 years, I'm going to tell everybody. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, I knew the Bengals were bad then. College kids.
You know, I've heard a lot of your stories. That's one of the better ones. I love that. All right.
Hey, and I wasn't with him. Just so you know.
You weren't.
I was not with him.
It doesn't seem like your scene anyway. All right. Take the break here. We'll come back. More to go around the corner on the old two-minute drill here. Two-minute drill, as always, brought to you by Jerry Seiner Cadillac. Shop your way. Get a piece of luxury that you deserve. Stop by. Test drive a Jerry Seiner Cadillac today. All right. Taking a break, coming back, more to go around the corner. Unravel continues.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Thanks for being with us, Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Just a whole pack. Listen, we're at the point now where college football is upon us. The NFL is almost upon us. And it's like you don't know what to do with your hands, you know? You're like, I'm standing here. What do I do with my hands now that everything starts getting...
You don't know what to do with your hands?
I just mean, like, we're standing here and we're going, oh, man, so what do I do here? This is a...
I wonder what Hans does with his hands.
What Hans does with his hands?
Hans does with his hands.
We're excited about college football. And we're excited about pro football to start up, obviously. So as we get things going here, Scott, it's that time of the show where we like to fire this thing up and get the two-minute drill going. Explain the two-minute drill for those who may not be familiar with what a two-minute drill is, Scott, here.
Well, briefly, let's just listen to that music because it just gets you inspired.
The autumn wind is a pirate.
All right, well, here's what you do late in a football game. You got to go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown, don't have a lot of time. So you hurry our show the same way. Still have a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up. Finish show, go home with a participation trophy because everyone gets a trophy these days, along with a plethora of desserts, which include chocolate souffle, flan from Spain, key lime pie from Florida, gelato from Italy, baklava from that old great country of Greece.
Still on the lookout for the whorehound candy. Still haven't found any.
And nothing from Sam Farnsworth because his is disgusting.
Yeah. First things up on the old two-minute drill here, Scott. I was going to...
I was having a good day until he said whorehound, by the way.
It's a family program. We can't say those types of cuss words on there. I wanted to bring this this up, our two-minute drill. Ozzie Guillen was on the White Sox talk show on NBC there in Chicago. And, of course, he's Ozzie Guillen played for a lot of teams, but did a good stretch, of course, with the White Sox. And he was on TV describing that when he was in the organization, and Michael Jordan was also in the organization for that brief amount of time as a White Sox. And he explained that Michael Jordan, on a road trip where they were on a bus, they ran. Apparently, I thought this was weird. He goes, the bus ran out of beer. That already sounds strange.
This is baseball.
But you've described to me, you know, when you guys got on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone wanted to sit by you because you weren't going to drink your beer, so you'd hand it out. So the same kind of thing, I guess, was happening on a charter bus for the White Sox in the mid-90s.
So this is the actual White Sox.
This is the White Sox.
Oh, yeah. If it was the minor league club, that's something else. But to not have beer on the bus for the majors? Oh, yeah.
Well, here's what
that's a cardinal sin there.
So Ozzie Guillen, basically, when the bus stopped and the bus had run out of beer, he forced three rookies, one of which was, of course, Michael Jordan, to go and buy beers at a local gas station. Now, I love the part of the story. It was totally run over, the part of the story where Michael Jordan has to be in a convenience store going, I'll take these cases.
Can we see some ID, please?
Well, not just that. You know there's a store guy. You know that there's a convenience store guy who goes, I knew it. Ozzie Guillen told the story. I swear I told my friends. I saw Michael Jordan came in and bought a bunch of beer for a bunch of minor league players, and he was like, no way. Or for a bunch of Major League Baseball
players.
Nobody
had a phone, right?
No one's, you're no not going to take a
phone
picture.
To take
no.
a picture of this.
So Ozzie Guillen described the whole thing, and this is what he said on the show here as well.
I just like that you told Michael Jordan to go buy some beer.
He's a rookie guy. I thought you like, he was a superstar back in the basketball court in the White Sox. I was the captain. Besides me, I got Roy Ventura protecting me. He said, send him. And we did. You know, we playing cards. Yeah. And that's the only guy who smoked cigars inside the bus.
There you go. A little peek into the... Michael Jordan smoking a cigar and I got Robin on
Ventura.
The bus.
I got Robin Ventura backing me up.
Right. Go get it, rookie. He's a rookie guy. I just love that idea of Michael Jordan being... look, and I bet he... Well, he said he brought it back to the, and he goes, and he threw him in his lap, goes, there's your beers, you know. But then it got back to the club owner or the general manager. And the general manager comes back and goes, Ozzie, you can't send Michael Jordan to buy beers off the bus. You're making us look bad to make one of the great athletes of all time. He goes, dude, why don't you make sure your bus doesn't run out of beer? A great story years later comes
that's
out.
That's
right?
Awesome. That does not make you look bad. It's like, and good for Michael Jordan for just going, I'll go get the beer. I'll be a rookie.
Well, the best part is the other two rookies who are with him are like, Michael Jordan's my beer with us. And then he said it was actually Michael Jordan who paid for it, too. The other two guys he didn't make pay for it. I was like, okay, thankfully. I love this. At Kentucky, right now, I had no idea this was going on.
Oh, this is awesome.
Kentucky football coach Mark Stoops on John Calipari saying that this is a basketball school. Apparently, there's a little bit of a back and forth here because John Calipari called the university a, quote, basketball school. Stoops responded with a basketball school. I thought we competed in the SEC. And he starts going back and forth. And I guess that they said, and John Calipari, so he goes to a press conference and he goes, when you start talking about my programs and others and we compete against, I don't do that, Stoops said. I stay in my lane. So that's in defense of my players, in defense of the work that we've done, and believe me, I want to continue to push. But don't demean or distract from the hard work that our kids have done to get to this point. I'm not going to apologize for that, and I will not.
Well, you shouldn't, because he's right. I mean, look, Kentucky is a basketball school. Come on, it's a basketball school.
Well, no, the football coach is the one who's saying that he's not going to apologize, right?
Right. So here's the thing. Here's the thing with Mark Stoops. Okay, and he doesn't realize this. The SEC basically has paid a lot of money to Kentucky to be average. Kentucky's like one of those non-conference games that you play in the SEC.
Yeah.
It's like it's a team you pay here. We're going to give you $1 million to come play us every year. That's what Vanderbilt is. That's what half of the SEC is. They're not. It's not a football conference.
So,
it's an Alabama Georgia conference.
Right. That's actually, you know what?
It is.
And like, what about us?
Because God is at Alabama. He's not. You made that clear before.
Right.
It'll change, though. Okay. LSU. Somewhere LSU
will climb
up the mountain. Florida will climb up the mountain sometimes. Yeah. Tennessee probably might be on its way back up the mountain for a brief period of time. But Georgia and Alabama, that is the SEC conference.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that. So Mark Stoops is not even taking a call from John Calipari now, and the athletic department is like, we sincerely like hope that our coaches can figure this out. They're both very talented men, blah 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 blah. But the reality is that you don't have beef between a head football coach and a head basketball coach at universities ever.
No.
They're like, this is unprecedented. We've never seen this. So Mark Stoops is pouting, and John Calipari goes, I shouldn't have said that. We shouldn't compare programs. He wasn't saying it's a slight mark.
No. He's just kind of speaking truthfully.
But again, this is what you always talk about, where it's like, find a way to have a chip on your shoulder about anything. If you want to tell your team, then we don't even get respect in our own university. Like, that might be the ultimate way of, like, pumping yourself up, right? Like,
well, yeah, and they should have a chip on their shoulder because there's a lot to be chippy about.
It is a basketball school, kids.
It is. It's been that way for eons of time.
They've competed, and they've done a good job, but Stoops said he's not going to let bickering derail the program as it prepares to open up against Miami.
Ohio. Can I tell a personal story?
Indulge yourself.
Okay, because it relates to the University of Kentucky. So I'm playing for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Uh-huh.
We have a training camp in Georgetown, which is right next to where the University of Kentucky is.
Right.
In Lexington.
Didn't you live in Kentucky, too?
I lived in Kentucky, which is basically part of Cincinnati.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, some of the players on the team have a Saturday night off, so they go into Lexington, and they end up in a bar. And they end up in the bar with a bunch of Kentucky football players.
Yeah.
And so they start, like, jawing at each other.
The NFL guys and the Kentucky football guys?
Come on. And the NFL guys end up getting, like, the crap kicked out of them.
Really?
And I'm like, man, I knew I was on a bad team. When this is Kentucky, that's a basketball school. Their football players are beating up our players who are pros.
Was it the kind of thing where it was like a couple cornerbacks trying to take on a couple linebackers?
Unfortunately, no, it wasn't.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm like, you should never tell a soul that happened, ever.
But when I'm hosting a radio show in 20 years, I'm going to tell everybody.
I am.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, I knew the Bengals were bad then. College kids.
I've heard a lot of your stories. That's one of the better ones. I love that. All right.
Hey, and I wasn't with them. Just so you know.
You weren't?
I was not with them.
It doesn't seem like your scene anyway. All right. Take the break here. We'll come back. More to go around the corner on the old 2-minute drill here. 2-minute drill, as always, brought to you by Jerry Seiner Cadillac. Shop your way, get a piece of luxury that you deserve. Stop by, test drive a Jerry Seiner Cadillac today. All right. Taking a break, coming back, more to go around the corner. Unravel continues.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Brought to you by G2G Bars. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for hanging out here with us. Final segment of the program, by the way. I did want to bring something up, and this is a little bit of a bummer, but I think that it's been something that we have followed quite closely since we were since we kind of got up to speed about this Little League team out of Santa Clara, Utah. The Snow Canyon Little League team went to Williamsport, of course, on the first trip to the Little League World Series that a local team here in Utah has made to Williamsport before. And I want to just make sure everybody out there has this kid in their heart here and in your prayers if you feel like so inclined. Easton Oliverson is a 12-year-old on this team. He's from Utah, and he's on that Snow Canyon Little League team, and his dad is one of the assistants on this All-Star team. And they went to Williamsport, and it appears that Easton fell out of the bunk bed at night while he was asleep and hit his head and was life-flighted to a children's hospital there in Danville, Pennsylvania, Scott. Appears that they had a successful surgery and his brain was reacting well. That's per the family. But they asked that that Easton – so he's not in the clear totally, but he's in the ICU. Could you imagine, I mean, all the things that have gone on preparing for this Little League World Series, having all these things happen, and then to have this massive tragedy at the same time. So they're trying to figure out how to get this team to have an amazing experience there while one of their teammates gets injured in just a freak accident and just a wild and just horrible, you know, situation for this family. Because on top of all this, the baseball is so much fun and it's an amazing thing. It's the most memorable thing that these kids have probably ever lived in their life. And then you have this. And to have their teammate going through that, one of their coaches, massive tragedy for them, but I think that pulling for Easton is as good as we can do right now. Easton Oliverson is his name.
And our hearts certainly go out to this family because it's a terrible thing to happen in the moment of probably one of the greatest joys of your life as a young man. I dreamt about being able to do that as a boy, and it just has to be so cool for all these teams. But in these struggling times, you know, a lot of times having that diversion, having sports to kind of, you know, get your mind off it, or I guarantee this little boy would say, yeah, I want you guys to keep playing and don't give up on my account. And this is just such a special opportunity. I remember Brett Favre's dad passed away shortly before a game and watching him play that game. His dad said, I want you to play. And I'm not saying this little boy's going to pass away or anything. It sounds like things might be headed in the right direction, but you know, being able to move on and have something to focus on and to pay tribute sometimes is a good thing to do. And of course there are times when not playing the game is the right thing to do, but it sounds like in this situation they should go on and keep playing but also keep this young boy in their hearts.
Yeah, no, the coaching staff and the coach Jace Oliverson, his father, the coaching staff made a statement. They said, hey, the team's going to continue to try to finish what they started, but now they have this newfound purpose. I think it's awesome. So prayers. I know thoughts and prayers sometimes gets thrown around a lot, but why not throw one out there for Easton Oliverson today as he's trying to get through this this brain injury there out representing Utah in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. All right. For Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery, Jeremy the producer, we'll be back again tomorrow, another edition of Unrivaled. Stay with us. All day right here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.